It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are in the socialist workers' paradise, the wonderland of the command economy, and gasoline's $5 a gallon, and there are bread lines, and people have free health care, and students have... No. What it is the 21st day of January 2021. Hi, I'm Robin. And in point of fact, oh, I got told that we're going to be just like Venezuela, and oh god, ow! It sometimes makes my brains hurt. But you know, you'll have that. Can't be helped. It's the first full day of the brand new Biden administration. Saying Biden administration just feels good. And they've hit the ground running, and they're about to run into a brick wall named the guy who actually runs America, Mitch McConnell. No shit, really. We'll get to all of it. But it's still a fantastic freaking day. Any day that begins with me watching my filthy morning habit and then putting up a photograph of COVID Caligula and melanoma getting in the helicopter. I still want to know where Barron is. But the font underneath says, witless ape rides helicopter. It's going to have to be a good day. Yeah, but that was a double-edged sword, too, because that was the headline from a Kevin Williamson piece in National Review that you don't want to go and read because you don't want to give those racist motherfuckers a damn eyeball, okay? You don't want to give them the views. Just enjoy the headline. Yeah, no shit. It took 2 hours and 55 minutes of the Biden of the first full day of the Biden administration for the producers at Morning Joe to find somebody who would come in and shit on Joe Biden. Damn. You know, because both sides. Because for profit. I was laughing for a minute. You gotta admit, witless ape rides helicopter is funny. But then I realized it was Kevin Williamson. And I knew that it was just going to be a bunch of unalloyed shittiness. So, you know, you'll have that. Okay. But, no, today is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we got some thorns. Even though, you know, there's a few little rose petals at the end of the stems. We got thorns. And I got to be catty today because Agnes showed me the photograph of whatever that was that melanoma changed into aboard the president's airplane that wasn't, I mean, it was Joe Biden's airplane when it was in the air. But, I don't know. Agnes said, look at this. And I went, ha! And She said, I promise you, honey, I will never let you out the door wearing something like that. I promise. And I thanked her because I couldn't tell whether what Melanoma was wearing when she landed in Florida would look better as cut into kitchen curtains or if it was actually the stolen White House twister mat. Yeesh. Whoa. Yeah, but every program here begins with gratitude. And this program is no different because it's our subscribers and a la carte contributors who keep the program alive and kicking. And so many thanks go out to our subscribers for this 21st day of the month. That means thanks to Janice and thanks to Kevin. And thanks to Harold, President and CEO of Sostris, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you very kindly indeed. And thanks to Jeremy, first past the post. That means we are down to, 477.50 in terms of fundraising to get even with this evening. Yeah, so thank you all very kindly, and hopefully we'll go forward with that further. And, of course, and by the way, it's cold in here, there appears to be a propane shortage. I guess that goes along with the socialism, too, doesn't it? Yeah, probably be heating the studio here with a middle oil drum filled with just toss in the occasional useless $100 bill because, you know, socialism. Mm-hmm. But no, it's 50 degrees in here. That's what it is. About last night, Robin. One of the flags, banners, and bumper stickers that the maggots are so fond of is Trump 2020, no more bullshit. Jeffrey gets an early start. Well, the irony of the flags, banners, and bumper stickers with Trump 2020, no more bullshit is the fact that that is all Donnie the Deceiver did his entire presidency. He just lied and bullshitted the people to the tune of approximately 23,000 lies. I thought it was north of 30,000 by the time it was all said and done. Maybe I was wrong. Even on his way out the door, this voluminous liar just spread more manure on the White House lawn. Maybe that's where little Barron is. Maybe he got in the way of the spreader. I don't know. But Jeffrey continues, Trump went on to tell a few bystanders on the lawn that the next administration will have a very easy time running the country because his administration has left the country in such great shape. Well, I started it. Yeah, both streams are going. Trump also declared that he will return in another form, and I imagine that he will, since he's run afoul of the law, F-O-W-L, shame. I can just see a fledgling Trump singing like a songbird to federal prosecutors, throwing his infested, nested family to the vultures. In the end, Trump better have the birds of prey say a prayer for the rapture, because Trump's next return forum will be as a, wait for it, yes, Trump's next form of return will be as a jailbird. That gets the cowbell. That damn sure does. And unfortunately for you, Donnie, there ain't no birdies where you're going because there ain't no golf. Well, maybe he could tend the golf course on, say, the minimum security prison at an Air Force base or something. Yeah. I think Jeffrey's right, because I could see Donald throwing Trader Tot and Iwanka under the bus. Jeffrey says, thank you, but as I actually just did that on the fly as I was just winging it. Oh, God, help us with this punky giraffe. Then there's this, Roger in Oregon's one of the most intelligent people I've ever heard and had a chance to listen to on the horn or anywhere else in this walk of life, and I love his input, but I was really disappointed last night with the use of the N-word. Jeffrey and I even recoiled and winced when we heard black people say that word, and that's the excuse, it's just a quote or some, sorry, but I'm calling bullshit on that one. Having said that, I'm going to use the B word to describe our next guest because the FCC allows the B word to go over normal broadcasting airwaves, and this next broad could be cast as an airhead. Yes, the B word broad, not that other B word. Not the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters word. But the FCC does let that one go, too. Jeffrey adds, yes, Joey and I will no longer be using the B word for female dog out of respect for you, Robin, considering you've come out of the closet and may find it offensive, or you may have always found it offensive. I've been trying to cut back on my usage of that word for a very long time. But I thought the acronym was cute. Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters. Thank you, Jeffrey. So instead of that other B word, we'll now use the word batshit, which sounds very close to, yeah. As I was saying before, Jeffrey interrupted me, the batshit crazy broad Jane Timken is a fraud because when she, along with several other political people, were asked to describe the ceremony yesterday, this fraud broad went off into a political service announcement paying homage to Trump's first term. Not one other Ohio politician, Democratic or Republican, made mention of Trump's term in their answer except Jane Timken, with her inappropriate, narrow-minded scope and untimely synopsis. Summarizing, Jeffrey says, yes, I think you could say Jane Timken, the head of the Ohio Republican Party, is narrow broad. You know, broad's not any better, right? It's not. It's really not. According to Timken,
under Trump's leadership, we reduced taxes and regulations, stood up to China and won the trade wars, defeated ISIS, negotiated deals in the Middle East, strengthened our military and provided for our veterans, and, of course, protected the sanctity of life and had a great economy until the pandemic hit.
Oh, God. Here's Jeffrey again. Yes, I, Jeffrey the giraffe, at this moment would wish to invoke the one and only Dan Aykroyd. Jane, you ignorant slut.
Well, at least he didn't call it.
Boy, this is just a minefield for me this afternoon. But anyway, Jane Timken just rattled off the bullshit Republican talking points, which mostly are just smoke and mirrors. You mean they didn't steal the mirrors on the way out? Because the economy was actually in recession as of March 1 last year, and ironically, the first person in this country believed to have had COVID was discovered on this day a year ago in the greater Seattle area. As far as the tax cuts are concerned, Roger in Oregon laid it all out beautifully approximately 2 months ago when he succinctly explained how the Trump tax cuts will continue for big business and the upper class, but have expired for the middle class and poor. Now, that got mentioned last night, yes. By all accounts, the trade deals have been a disaster. The art of the deal dude got screwed by China on that one. Trump stole money from the veterans for his worthless wailing wall on the border. However, the one I like is the sanctity of life bullshit. There are around 800,000 abortions every year in this country, and Lord knows that's just terrible, according to the wacko right wing. Well, in about two more months, a year will have passed since the devastating daily number of deaths due to the COVID crisis began to rack up. And sadly, we're easily going to have at least 500,000 deaths due to the coronavirus. And again, according to Bill in Allentown, we can lay those numbers right on the doorstep of Donald J. Trump, whom he referred to as the Dondemic, who referred to the Dondemic as a Democrat hoax. Concluding, Jeffrey offers this up.
Sure seems a lot like a lot of death for the sanctity of life. Every life counts, Republican Party. I think everybody should get a gun. That'll stop all the killings.
And Jeffrey, you're killing all of us. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, January the 21st, the 21st day of January, 2021. With Giraffe singing Nelly Furtado's I'm Like a Bird to Donald J. Trump, and the J does stand for, yes, jailbird. And there's a $25 jailbird challenge on the table, which is awfully handy for knocking things down from $467.50. So, thanks very kindly. I don't know that. Okay, I know there was a problem with the head-on.live stream, and that's kind of weird. And I don't know why I'm getting the. Oh, it's going to be one of those evenings, isn't it? Yep. Now I have clicking on my keyboard. My audible. And I didn't change any settings. I hate it when that happens. Hey. Let's see. Okay, we can minimize that.
And anyway, if you want to augment your listening experience this evening, now that we're actually getting to listen, now that the streams are both working, I don't know why they weren't. Anyway, you can pop on by the Horn chat room, and you can you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Otto and Ralps and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and have a wonderful time being capably moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen once again not to fold space. And he never doesn't fold space without a good reason. So, yeah, right. Arthur said, I often put the wrong synopsis in the wrong syllabus. Oh, I know. It happens to me all the time. But anyway, here we are. Here we are at Thorn in the Side Thursday, the first day of the Socialist Workers' Paradise. I just keep saying it because it makes me giggle a little bit every time I do. Yeah. And it, as previously noted, it started off with a good giggle, but then it turned into shit on Joe Biden time. I wonder if Kevin Williamson will be asked back after that little performance today. I don't know. It's yeah, you can check it out. Just let it go. Let it go. But for Thorns in the Side, we have a few. Earlier today, there was a story that Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber hadn't filed a bill of impeachment against Joe Biden yet because it turned out that Congressing is harder than she thought it was. And that's how it goes, you know, when you're Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber. But she said she's got it all figured out. And so let's check in for the extra special dose of nutty.
Just filed articles of impeachment on President Joe Biden. We'll see how this goes. Just filed articles of impeachment on President Joe Biden. We'll see how this goes.
You want to know how it's going to go, Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber? You look like a real asshole. That's how it goes. And, you know, maybe Mo Brooks less brains, you know, maybe some of the other treasonous assholes who helped egg on the insurrection in the Capitol will join with you, but it's going nowhere. Yeah. And just a general reminder that she thinks that Satanist Democrats are farming children underground in order to harvest and drink their blood. But she said, Americans can't have a president who's threatened foreign governments to remove government officials. Ay. Well, she... I know. On what fucking ground, says Arnold? Well, it's over Ukraine, where Joe Biden told the corrupt leader of Ukraine, with whom Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber has now aligned herself, that if the corrupt prosecutor wasn't canned, that there would be no further help from the United States. It was done on orders. It was agreed to by the community of nations trying to help support democracy in the Ukraine. In Ukraine, there's no the. It's a country. So, that. And for pity's sake, Steve in New York pointing out Marjorie Taylor's Green Cucumber's bill of impeachment. She can't file it until she gets the invoice. The bill, get it. Yeah, okay. That's yeah. So it's not much different than what I had predicted for Hillary Clinton 4 years ago. You'll recall that in the days before the 2016 election, I said that there would be a bill of impeachment filed against her by some godforsaken idiot Republican
you know, before, it, actually, I said right after her hand came off the Bible. At one point in time, had she been allowed to take office, having won the popular vote, we would have, we had a pool going to see how on which day they would file their first bill of impeachment against Hillary Clinton. And, oh, this is just further. To them, it's just a joke. Yeah. To the normal people, however, it is a deadly serious political decision that is not to be taken lightly. But Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber is, not to put too fine a point on it, Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I in may. Yeah. Right. The stock answer as to my weird little computer problem, Randy Radar says, is that your computer got bit by a cosmic ray. It does happen, but not as frequently as other explanations. Well, at this point in time, I'll buy into just about anything. But any kidding and outrage aside, the fact of the matter is the grown-ups are back in charge, and it's a good thing. Because today, in his first full day in office, he signed 10 more executive orders having to do with fighting the coronavirus pandemic, the Dondemic. He was pretty clear-eyed about it, though. He said it's going to take months to get where we need to be, and it will. He wants to ramp up vaccinations in line with that 100 million vaccinations in 100 days. Public transportation and interstate transportation will require everyone to wear a mask. I don't know how that's going to play against the, but I have an undisclosed medical condition that my doctor says I don't got to tell you because HIPAA and OSHA. I have a feeling some people simply will not engage in compliance for the sake of the good of the greater good of society. You know, without an inducement, like put your mask on and we won't fine you $1,000. Our good friends in up over down under in Australia seem to have had some luck with that level of inducement. And so it's hopeful. It's hopeful because at least now there's a plan. There was no plan, you see, for the last year. No matter how hard some maggots have tried to argue otherwise, they've just failed. Yeah, I forget who it was. Let me see here. It was some right-wing POS. Oh, there it was. Yeah, of course it was Klan adjacent minority whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana Stan, who said, "Don't let the media and Democrat politicians spin this differently. Biden's vaccine plan is Trump's vaccine plan. The new 90 states was already on track for 100 million doses in 100 days. They'll try to tell you this is a new plan. It ain't." Actually, he said, "It's not." Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Because, see, we're nowhere near on track to 100 million doses in 100 days, considering the fact that we don't even have 10 million doses in 10 million arms yet. And, of course, anytime Steve Scalise comes into the conversation, it's always good to remind people that he did. He played footsie. He played footsie with the crowd and or with the Klan. Right, yeah. So, they are getting busy. The mask mandate, the 100 million vaccines,
100 federally supported vaccination centers. That works out to, what, two per state? But I'm sure it doesn't work exactly like that. Trying to reopen kindergarten through eighth grade schools. Jeez. And starting next month, the vaccines are supposed to be available in local pharmacies. This morning, of all places I ever expected to see him, Stephanie Ruhle invited Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice to come on and talk about how star-spangled awesome our vaccine program is in West Virginia. Now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion do I want you to think that we ain't vaccinating the bejesus out of people. Forgive me, God. Here in West Virginia, we got a great vaccine program going on. No, we don't. 500 doses for people 70 and up in 9 counties is not a recipe for broadly vaccinating a state. I think we did a halfway decent job of getting vaccines into our long-term senior care facilities and rehab facilities and such, and we did a good job of vaccinating people who work in those facilities, and then not so much. I am happy that Dr. Bill has gotten his vaccine because, well, Dr. Bill's over 80, just barely. And so he was able to go to the old Raleigh County Armory and sit in his car for a while, and then they came up and they gave him the vaccine, and that's wonderful. But, you know, it becomes, as more and more people get vaccinated, it's going to approach that territory of, what young John Kerry said about the end of the Vietnam War. Who wants to be the last person to die for a mistake? Well, who wants to be the last person to die of a massive institutional governmental failure that was more like intentional conduct on the part of the maggot regime? Ron Klain is running the vaccine response for President Biden. Still feels good to say President Biden. And he says 100 million vaccinations is a metric by which the new administration will be judged in its first 100 days. Adding, ultimately, the goal is to wipe out the virus. How long or short that takes depends in some ways on the course of the virus and obviously the course to which people follow our leadership. But I think we should be measured by the actions the administration takes to try to change the way in which this country is handling this crisis. And so there's also the plan to add another $1,400 check to people's pockets because, see, $1,400 plus $600 equals $2,000. And I know math is hard, and I'm no good at ciphering, but that's how, yeah, so it will be $2,000 as long as Congress effing cooperates. And that appears to be an open question. But he's put forward a $1.9 trillion economic relief plan. That's what Roger was talking about last night when he said if we eliminate the tax cuts for the rich, then we'll have the $1.9 million. But, you know, it apparently will need 60 votes in the Senate. I don't know why budget reconciliation can't be used and just do it with a bare majority, but that'd be busy. But that's another matter entirely. Pat Toomey, who recently was, you know, who is a senator from Pennsylvania and recently was making noises about how he was sick and tired of Donald Trump and supporting impeachment and stuff. All of a sudden he's not sitting now that there's a Democrat in the White House, he's become a fiscal deficit hawk. Blasting out another $2 trillion in borrowed or printed money when the ink on December's $1 trillion 8 bill is barely dry and much of the money is not yet spent would be a colossal waste and economically harmful. That's what Pat Toomey said, who is never going to have to worry about paying his rent
or feeding a family, or making a car payment, or a mortgage payment, or car insurance, or homeowner's insurance, or buying groceries, or car repairs, or home repairs, or, you know, keeping the house warm in winter. Pat Toomey's never going to have to worry about that. So naturally, Pat Toomey says, it'd be a colossal waste and economically harmful. To who, Pat? Godforsaken. But it's not like anybody should be surprised. And today we passed another milestone for number of dead people from the coronavirus, but that probably doesn't bother Pat Toomey too much either. Or any Republicans. Now that they can run away. Oh, no, that was that orange fucker's fault. I don't know who he was. I mean, he was just around here for 4 years, and we spent 4 years with our noses up his fundament so far that when he sneezed, you could see our entire collective smiling faces. But we don't know who that guy was. But he wasn't a real Republican. Oh, that's one of the ones I love the best. Not a real Republican. I can remember when, old. I can remember so far back that I can remember, like, late 2008 when all the Republicans were saying, well, my friends, George W. Bush wasn't a true conservative, and that's why we're in the mess we're in. What we need is a true fiscal conservative, not a Kenyan Muslim, you slurper. And that brings us into, of course, the matter of getting things done. Because, as I mentioned previously, Moscow Mitch is playing his games again. Moscow Mitch badly wants to control the Senate and therefore make sure that nothing of the Biden administration's ambitious plans can be accomplished. So now he's demanding that Nitwit Nero's impeachment trial not start until early February. But earlier today, he demanded that the Democrats promised to never, ever, 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 no kidding, ever change another Senate rule and not touch the precious, lovely filibuster so that he and his treasonous comrades can make sure that this country continues to suffer based solely upon their own desire to be restored to political power. God, it's disgusting. And in fact, Matt in San Francisco, subject line, trial prep. So now they want to delay the Senate impeachment trial so 45 can prepare a defense. I guess that means no one even wants to be the lawyer on that side. That's absolutely true. He's going to wind up with Rudy. You know how it goes. Yeah, he's going to wind up with Rudy. That or the fee is going to have to be so monumental that the lawyer taking the case can say, hey, I got all the money I'm ever going to need. I don't need another client. I don't need a reputation. I don't need any respect. I can just flush it all down the toilet by representing a man who incited an insurrection and an attack on the Capitol. Kind of reminds you of the public defender lawyer for the person seen carrying away Nancy Pelosi's podium. Well, I mean, that doesn't look good for your client. And what was his response? I'm not a miracle worker. No. Mm-hmm. There's just a bunch of crap to be cleaned out of the nation's collective closet. Since we were talking about the virus, let's take a minute for this. ProPublica with a story today that was infuriating.
The headline simply says, how many vaccine shots go to waste? Several states aren't counting.
Gee, I wonder which states those are. I wonder if that would be the states that end with Stan or begin with Tala.
Yeah. Officials coordinating immunization efforts are blind to exactly how many of the precious limited doses are going into the trash and why. In Washington, a health facility allegedly threw out some COVID-19 vaccine doses at the end of worker shifts because staff believed state guidelines blocked them from giving unused shots to people below the top priority tier. In Maryland, they appear to have thrown out thawed doses when they ran out of time to safely administer them. In Talibandiana, the media was informed that, they threw out some shots. And Talibandiana said they had a law that said they were supposed to tell how many were thrown away, but somehow or another, they couldn't tell ProPublica. But they said, the wastage has been minimal. Yeah. And this is disturbing to Dr. Ashish Jha, Dean of the School of Public Health at Brown University. He said the number of wasted doses in this country is probably far higher than any little handful. And he had told a story previously about one doctor an ER doc who was forced to waste vaccine doses, and then his phone filled up with more than a dozen messages from other medical workers confirming what he suspected at a time when the U.S. is desperately short on vaccines. A significant number of doses are ending up in the trash. Yeah. And so because states and facilities get blasted on social media when they waste doses, they've figured out that the best way to go about it is to just not report it after all. There are wastage mandates in Pennsylvania and Colorado, but it's unavoidable that some will be wasted. But you think back to that story out of Wisconsin, when the maggot doctor, who was a conspiracy theorist, deliberately destroyed 500 doses. That's basically 500 counts of attempted murder. Yeah, it's troubling, and it makes things like 100 million doses in 100 million arms in 100 days all the harder. The CDC said if there is excess vaccine, clinic staff should do everything possible to avoid wasting the dose. If vaccine wastage occurs, it should be reported into CDC's vaccine tracking system. We're working to figure out how to provide this data online in the future when the data is more complete. And there's now some thinking that if facilities wind up with something like that, they need to do whatever they can to see that the doses get used, even if they're outside the accepted parameters for using them. If a pharmacist, for instance, ProPublica reports, has an extra dose, give that dose to somebody, even if you don't have a nonagenarian, octogenarian, septuagenarian, or sexagenarian around. Give somebody that dose, because every dose adds to the quantum of recipients, which means every dose is that much closer to achieving what we hope will be a vaccine-driven herd immunity. Over in Columbus, Ohio, this is a good example. A local vaccination site hasn't had to waste a single dose because If there were extra doses at the end of the day, they used them on their own staff. And then after that, the mayor of Columbus said, okay, give them to cops on the wait list. But even though only healthcare workers were eligible at the time. So if they had extra doses, they'd call the police station and give it to the cops. There's a lot of people who want the vaccine. Boss Man Wayne, for instance, is76. Can't get a vaccine for love nor money. Because, you know, 76 isn't 80. And it's more important to do to follow those rules than it is to bend them a little bit for somebody who's less than 3 years short of 80. Jesus. Oh, dear, dear Robin, says Steve in New York, waste reporting. If we don't report waste, there is no waste. Recall that all those damn tests caused us to have so many cases. Yes, I know. It's going to be a while getting the maggotry out of our little noggins, isn't it? Yeah. Well, then, Kyle, you're right. This is what you get when you didn't have federal guidelines and maggot governors in all these states. Republican Party is a death cult. Well, Washington State was part of that story, and they don't have a maggot governor, but I get your point. Real Republicans, when Republican politicians use the word real in front of anything, be wary. It's language from the Klan of the 1920s and 1930s. I remind you of a racist Republican bastard named D.C. Stevenson, Speaker of the Indiana General Assembly, rapist and murderer. Well, he was charged with manslaughter and convicted of second-degree manslaughter, even though his victim was a woman. The Klan used real American to mean white people. Republicans are using real Republican in the same way, read white people. Even though the translucent beings among us burn at the thought of the sun, we should have better care for the language. Yeah. Your buddy Dave in the blind. It can be so devilish sometimes. Yeah, I know. Arnold's still kicking furniture over Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber and her bill of impeachment. It makes sense to me. James in Illinois, cops, send it to the jailhouse, too. What a great way to keep from having the pandemic run rampant through a correctional facility. Yeah. Matt in San Francisco, subject line ProPublica. They've been doing some great work this week. They have another article with a link to 150 videos of the siege organized by time of day, the most comprehensive I've seen on what went on earlier this month. Some of that shit's absolutely maddening to watch. But it's not all annoyance. A formal ethics complaint has been filed against tender young Josh Hawley and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. The letter that encompassed the complaint was a rather lengthy and detailed affair, complete with footnotes, and it went on for 10 pages. Here's the name of the Patriots: Sheldon Whitehouse, Tina Smith of Minnesota, Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Ron Wyden of Oregon, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, and Tim Kaine of Virginia. 9 pages complete. Oh my God, just to give you an idea, I'm not going to sit here and read the whole damn thing. You can find it for yourself. Politico has a copy of it. But there are 65 footnotes. This has everything but 8x10 color glossy photos with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, although I wouldn't be surprised if by the time that this gets heard,
they got those too. Just to share a little bit, because they open forcefully. Dear Chairman Coons and Vice Chairman Lankford, when Senators Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley announced they would object to the counting of state-certified electors on January 6, 2021, they amplified claims of election fraud that had resulted in threats of violence against state and local officials around the country. While Congress was debating Senator Cruz's objection, a violent mob stormed the Capitol. These insurrectionists ransacked the building, stole property, and openly threatened members of Congress and the Vice President. Dozens of police officers were injured. Five people died, including U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick. By proceeding with their objections to the electors after the violent attack, Senators Cruz and Hawley lent legitimacy to the mob's cause and made future violence more likely. Senators Hawley and Cruz's actions have been denounced by individuals across the political spectrum. The Senate has the exclusive power to determine whether these actions violated its ethics rules, to investigate further conduct of which we may not be aware that may have violated these rules, and to consider appropriate discipline. The question the Senate must answer is not whether Senators Hawley and Cruz had the right to object to the electors, but whether the senators failed to, quote, put loyalty to the highest moral principles and to country above loyalty to persons, party, or government department, or engaged in, quote, improper conduct reflecting on the Senate in connection with the violence of January 6th. The Senate's Ethics Committee should investigate their conduct to fully understand their role, the actions of which we know demand an investigation and a determination whether disciplinary action is warranted. Until then, a cloud of uncertainty will hang over them and over this body. Told you it was good. And it goes on at length. Senators Hawley and Cruz declared their intention to object to the vote amidst violent threats. The events of January 6th were coordinated and may have been coordinated with members of Congress. Senators Hawley and Cruz continued their objections to the electors after the attack on the Capitol, escalating the crisis. As violence was threatened and consumed the Capitol, Senators Hawley and Cruz engaged in fundraising efforts. And then comes the argument, which is impressive. Impressive indeed. Again, Politico.com, look up investigation request for Cruz and Hawley. But here's the thing. I don't trust Senator Lankford of Oklahoma Stan. And the Ethics Committee has been, over the years, a notorious thin reed upon which to hang any hopes. I'd actually kind of like to see, I'd like to see some criminal charges against those two. But then again, I'm kind of hardcore on this. They're focusing on Cruz and Hawley. But what about the other five members of the Seditious Seven? What about Marsha, goodness, Blackburn, who certainly wasn't shy? Oh, no, not at all. What about Cindy Hyde-Smith of Muzuppistan? What about Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming? What about John Kennedy of Louisiana? What about Roger Marshall of Kansas? What about Rick Scott of Florida? And, of course, what about Tommy the Tuber from Alabama? Well, at least in Tommy and Marsha and Cindy's cases, maybe they can plead brain damage or ignorance, because nobody would even dare to try to challenge those claims because, well, res ipsa loquitur. There's our Latin phrase for the evening. The thing speaks for itself. Yeah, you're right. Kyle says, Hawley fucking supported the insurrectionists on the day of the damned insurrection, and yes, of all of them committed treason. Lock them up! Lock them up! Yeah, but we don't do that, do we? So, yeah.
Sheesh. It, what else? Somehow or another, I don't know how he managed to stay off the Seditious Seven list, but Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, didn't. But that doesn't mean he's any less a shit-eating little weasel, because he is. And while everybody else was saying, or most people were saying, what a brilliant and conciliatory and decent speech President Biden delivered yesterday, with, as noted yesterday, none other than Chris Wallace over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, noting that he had seen every inaugural speech since the 60s forward. Well, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is, as usual, all but hurt. And so, naturally, that same network, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, called Rand Paul to get his expert opinion on the content of President Biden's inaugural address.
Much of it is thinly veiled innuendo, calling us white supremacists, calling us racists, calling us every name in the book, calling us people who don't tell the truth.
Well, Rand, if the shoe fits, or in this case, it may be a bird. You know, Joey and Giraffe were talking about birds earlier. It may be a bird. It may be that notorious bird known as the foo, that is known to leave its droppings in inopportune places. And so Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, it seems very clearly in what he said here to be a case of if the foo shits, well, Rand's wearing it. Funny how white supremacist wasn't part of the address. Yeah, funny how none of the words that Rand Paul recited were in the address. And yet, he thought it was veiled innuendo. Oh, it's time to cue up Carly Simon again. He's so vain, he probably thought that speech was about him. Yep. And so he went on and said, going forward, we are not going to have manufactured or manipulated truth. That's another way of saying all of my opponents manufacture and manipulate the truth and are liars. No, it isn't. And Aristotle's ashes are trying to recombine somewhere in space-time and reconfigure just to sit down and explain logic to poor, poor, poor libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul, who was so goddamn stupid he couldn't pass his ophthalmology boards and had to set up his own libertarian ophthalmological certifying board with a membership and leadership of one. Rand Paul, are you qualified to be an ophthalmologist? I think I am. Good for you. Yes, good for me.
I mean, he just said it in a nicer way, but that really was the gist of what he was telling us. And he needs to reject the impeachment of Donald Trump because that's just going to divide the country further.
But the problem is, COVID Caligula's name was not to be found anywhere in the text of the speech. In fact, President Biden assiduously avoided it. And, of course, in the aftermath of November's presidential election, well, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, repeatedly echoed and amplified Nitwit Nero's claims of voter fraud. of which there was next to none. I mean, there were a few cases found, and it turned out the cases that were found were fucking Republicans engaging in voter fraud. But who's counting? Right? Right. Jesus, he's disgusting. But he's also Rand Paul, so, you know. Eh, meh. Who's surprised? Yeah, there's an idea. What leftover vaccinations, going back to that for a minute, Steve in New York says, what about grocery store clerks and other essential employees? There's that. At Jeremy in Vermont, the seditious seven. Bounce them out, bounce them out, bounce them out. Bounce them out, bounce them out. Bounce them out. Again, we don't do that. No, we don't. But it would be nice to have, I mean, as compelling as the complaint filed against Cruz and Hawley is, it would be nice to have a little bit louder cry for their figurative heads. Because, see, treason blinked at becomes treason empowered. Just historically speaking, that tends to be how it works. Manufacturing truth, says Kyle. You mean the thing he and Republicans do? God damn, he's bad at projecting, and where's his neighbor when you need him? We need to keep that dude on standby. He's only kidding, Agent Fred. Only kidding. Remember, please. Ah, the mere mention of Rand Paul sends Flavio into paroxysms. That coprophagus mustelid needs another visit from his neighbor. Well, you know, if coprophagus mustelid, or is that mustelid? I got coprophagus right. Well, if a pair of $50 words like that doesn't get you a cowbell around here, what with me being a practitioner of the art of word knowing and everything? Nothing does. No, nothing does. And our first day of olive branching has come and gone. In particular, we go to the second most powerful Republican in the Senate, namely John Cornholio of Texas. Yeah, because Jen Psaki, you don't pronounce the P, P-S-A-K-I. Jen Psaki had tweeted, because tweeting has not and is not going to go away. Senior White House correspondent for CNN, Phil Mattingly, noted by Twitter that Psaki on the impeachment trial had said, we are confident that the Senate can multitask, and went on to say that President Biden, being the president now and in an entirely separate branch of government, will leave the specifics on the timing and the mechanics of the impeachment trial to Congress. Well, Senator Cornholio, being a no-good, shit-eating Republican, retweeted Phil Mattingly and said, nope. So we know where they are. They have no interest in dealing with a trial of a president, a former president, who incited a bloodthirsty mob to engage in treasonous insurrection and attack the capital of the United States. Nope. John Cornholio's just gonna wink at that. Yeah. Because John Cornholio is still scared shitless of the maggots in Texas, of whom there are far too many. Nope. So with a single four-letter ungrammatical statement, nope. We're going to let Donald. He wants to just let Donald Trump walk. Because I guess he wants to see Donald Trump run again in 2024. Or maybe Iwanka. But he wants Donald Trump to create his... is that what it is? He's scared Donald Trump will follow through with his bullshit promise and form the PP party? Is that it? And then John Cornholio will have to become part of the PP party and wear a little yellow hat. Maybe get a nickname like something like, you know, Old Urine Stain. Yeah, who knows? Jesus, they suck. And I think this may have turned out to be satire. But sometimes satire is so close to reality that you're damned well deviled to figure out if it is or isn't. Someone has said this is a comedian. Maybe it is. If somebody can verify it, that would be cool. Claiming that it's Blair Erskine, and Blair Erskine is a brilliant comedian. You tell me, this is a study in bias confirmation. That's what this is. By the way, we've crossed into the second hour of the program. We've still got $468.50 to raise, and of that, $168.50 finishes off yesterday. $168.50 gets us fully funded through yesterday. Thanks in advance to anybody who wants to jump in alongside Jeremy. But, no, this is a study in bias confirmation. We all know what we think of the maggots. Because we've all had plenty of real-world examples of their behavior. We've seen them hooting and barking and grunting and screaming. We've seen them with their "fuck your feelings" T-shirts and flipping the bird. Actually, it's a hand gesture that looks very much like the outline of the state of West Virginia. At members of the only profession that actually is mentioned by name in the Constitution of the United States, namely a free press. And so when you hear something like this, and I listened to this numerous times trying to see if I could find any tells, if there was anything in the way of a giveaway to let me know that this was a, oh, that's just hilarious. And I think, I'm pretty sure that whoever responded to my posting of it was, right, this probably is a comedian. But she needs to just tuck some sort of an Easter egg in there so that we can know that this isn't a real maggot, because this sounds like a real maggot. Really real.
President Trump, if you see this, please save us. I don't even see our American flag anymore. Biden's talking with some kind of crazy flag. This is America. This is our land. Please, President Trump. Please, please. I hope you have a plan. God, please save us. Save us from the devil, please. Y'all, I'm about to have a panic attack. This is our country. Our country. This is awful. God, please save us. Please. President Trump.
Did you hear any? Okay. if you're watching it in video, and this is a radio program, the only tell I can find is that she's bawling, and there don't appear to be any tears coming out of her eyes. But the sniffling, and she keeps wiping her hands across her face as if to, and, you know, wiping away those tears that aren't there. But it's, I tried to, God damn it, being a liberal's hard.
Goddamn neoliberal establishment shill.
But it is. Because I didn't find it funny. I found it pathetic. I found it pitiable. But even pathos and pity can be a function of our urge to have our biases confirmed. But God, if that's not a real one, there are real ones just like her out there. And their existence points toward the difficulty that we're going to have solving our problems. It is, in fact, going to be damn difficult to drag a person like this into reality. Arnold says that video's fake. Well, somebody said it's Blair Erskine. And we've seen Blair Erskine's other work, and nobody imitates the maggots like Blair Erskine does. You know, it's captioned, MAGA woman has a breakdown over Biden being inaugurated. And it took off like wildfire. And I sat there and watched it and watched it and watched it and finally decided to retweet it. And didn't retweet it in terms of, ha, 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 ain't that funny? Because it didn't strike me as funny. Not funny at all. So it's not that the video's fake, it's that it's not a real maggot. And I know there are shades of difference between the two. So, I have no pity for the real maggots because they've been engaged in a process of amplifying and spreading wholesale untruths for 4 years plus. Every QAnon cucumber, thanks Malloy. Every boat, caravan, maggot, what have you. Every stop the steal. Every Hunter Biden, fuck them all. Oh, I know I'm supposed to be so civil, but I have a feeling they're going to make it impossible. And Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm pretty sick and tired of how reporters are equating the Biden administration's rollback of Trump's devastating executive orders or what Biden calls executive actions and the Biden administration's $1.9 trillion relief package as not extending the olive branch to repigs and not showing unity. And quite frankly, no one on our side is calling these assholes out, and even Psaki is not at nailing their asses for this bullshit, although she came sort of close this afternoon, stating that Republicans want the same things Democrats want. Why is it that repigs can throw any bullshit against the wall, and they're never asked why they haven't worked with Dems? Why are Dems required to reach across the fucking aisle? Why are we in the serious mess we are because of repigs? Why doesn't someone say to repigs that because they screwed everything up, they need to reach the olive branch to us?
Republicans are raising all the old bullshit tropes and red herrings. The fucking Hyde Amendment, the deficit, etc. They got nothing new. So predictable. Well, Darlene, they don't need anything new if the for-profit media is just going to go along with them. Like I said at the beginning of the program, because I checked my watch, clock, whatever, and it was exactly 2 minutes and 55 seconds into the first Morning Joe of the new administration before they found Kevin Williamson to come in and babble about Biden being a liar. And how did this, I mean, it was just snark, okay? Poor Mika was so titillated by his op-ed in the National Review, historically a clearinghouse for some of the worst racist publishing in the history of the country since 1950, challenged perhaps only by Klan Monthly. A, how does that guy get on the air? But B, no, Mika was so titillated by it that she read the whole damned piece on air. And like I said, the headline was enjoyable. Witless ape rides helicopter. But I dare say that any one of us could have come up with something like that in one of our front porch conversations. But there they were, 2 minutes and 55 seconds in, and, you know, well, Joe Biden was lying yesterday when he done said. And this is the same clown who wrote the piece years ago that sent me off the rails, blithering and blathering about poor hillbilly women who spent all of their EBT money filling up the cart with Pepsi Cola, which they'd sell on the Eastern Kentucky Pepsi Cola black market. And that wasn't satire. Well, I'll be darned. Thank you. Ralph, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, says the video of crying maggot isn't on Blair Erskine's Twitter. So I don't know. Maybe it is real. It's still pitiable. But they're not. Darlene, as long as it works, they're not going to go away from it. One of the more fascinating things I thought, like many of you, when the program was over last night, I went and watched the Celebration of America, okay? And I watched it on MSNBC. And there was some discussion between Rachel Maddow, rhymes with shadow, and Joy Reid regarding the content of the inaugural address in which, and I'm paraphrasing, President Biden said that we can't be participating in the manufacturing of false facts. You know, he did everything but say alternative facts. We knew exactly what he was talking about. It wasn't innuendo. It was just better language. But then Joy Reid said something, and like I said at the end of the program yesterday, I was pretty fucking tired. It had been a long day. I don't mean like 15 miles on the Erie Canal long day or anything, but it had been a long day. For chemical reasons, these days are very long these days because my medications are all screwed up. But nonetheless, exhaustion or no, when I heard Joy Reid say, I don't know if that's going to be possible, because there's just too much money to be made in feeding these false narratives to people who are hungry for them, I went, what? Because it was absolutely true. And it was one of the most candid things that I'd heard said recently on the for-profit media. Basically, Joy Reid was confessing that we are going to continue to have the problems that we have because it's a big dollar. A good dollar. And then, let's see, six, I'm sorry, it wasn't 2 hours and 55 minutes. It was 1 hour and 55 minutes. Then about 8 hours and 55 minutes later, there's Morning Joe proving the point. And I guess some booker there at Morning Joe thought it would be cute. And look, I did a screenshot. I took a screenshot. I put it on Facebook. Witless ape rides helicopter. I even said it was the image of the day. Does that mean I'm part of the problem? I don't know. I try not to be. But it could have been left at that. Kevin Williamson at the National Review has penned a scathing op-ed deconstructing and utterly demolishing the Republican commitment to Donald Trump that resulted in the last 4 years. Something like that. And that could have been the end of it. But instead, because there's too much money to be made in, you know, shitting on people for the sake of a dollar, there was Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough hosting a conversation with the guy who wrote the piece, Kevin Williamson, and proving the truth of every word that Joy Reid had said the night before. Yes, yes, and I know Joy Reid is not insufficiently ideologically pure. But when you hear something like that, I couldn't help myself. And I went, what? So, it's not going anywhere. So, and Ralph says Doug further, and it was Rex Champman who originally tweeted the video that I saw of the crying maggot lady, and there's nothing there that I see to indicate that she was anything but real. So maybe it wasn't real. Maybe it wasn't. But I felt like this morning at roughly 7:55 a.m. was a pretty good idea of where we're going to have to, because see, they don't know at a for-profit media show like Morning Joe, they don't know where to go now that the only person they knew how to talk about has gone. Because I guess there's no big dollar to be had, say, in talking about something that I had planned to discuss this evening. Oh, no, that's there. We'll go there. All right. So, let's get this started. Arnold just mentioned something. One of the executive orders that was signed yesterday had to do with eliminating discrimination against people based on sex or gender stereotypes. In other words, the federal government, we're going back to what the status of the federal the executive branch regs were at the end of the Obama administration regarding who can go to which bathrooms. And I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but there are these things called TERFs. It's an acronym, TERF. Trans-Exclusionary Radical Feminists. And so now, and this is what Arnold was alluding to, forgive me if you've talked about it already, but some right-wingers are saying that one of the executive orders Biden signed is anti-woman because it's pro-gender equality. Oh, they're saying that, and they got themselves a nasty little hashtag trending. And it is infuriating. Because they're saying that acknowledging people for, or not discriminating against people for who they love or how they look, is somehow
erasing women.
I have not had any direct experience with a TERF yet. It will not be nice when I do. But yeah, but Arnold, you need to understand, it's not just right wingers. There are people who call themselves liberal and or progressive who are TERFs. And for instance, they have conniptions about sports, and they have conniptions about bathrooms. For instance, I think in 16 years, it's 16 years now, transgender people have been able to compete in the Olympics as their perceived gender. In 16 years, one trans person, one, has tried to compete in their perceived gender. One. A transmasculine swimmer from, I believe, a school in California. He tried to compete in the Olympic trials and was thoroughly thrashed. Not legally or anything, just couldn't cut the mustard. That's one person in 16 years. But the TERFs have a conniption. Well, they're stealing women's sports from women's. Even though there are complicated scientific, medical, biochemical rules in place to make sure that, Bruce Jenner isn't going to be racing against cisgender females and winning everything. And for the most part, they don't. Trans men, trans women, they don't win. But that doesn't slow the TERFs down because, well, you know, facts are not going to get in the way of their goddamn bigotry. And they're kind of headquartered in the UK because there's a ton of white privilege at work there. Because a lot of trans people are people of color. But nonetheless, they found their way over here, too. And they've got adherents here. And it's revolting to hear someone trying to enshrine bigotry as a rights-based argument. Frankly, I can't tell the difference between a TERF and a maggot who screams that, a proud boy or a boogaloo, you know, member of the boogaloo incel tactical command headquarters, who pisses and moans, Jews will not replace us. We'll just change that to trans will not replace us, and you've got a TERF. Ta-da! Then we'll talk some more about that in a minute, but I hate to keep people on hold, and there's Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
Lady Raw Dog, what's shaking, man?
That's Raw Bitch, damn it.
Raw Bitch. What's going on, brother?
Sister. Sibling.
Sibling. There we go.
Another day in Happy Valley, freezing my ass off back here. And,
Jesus, man. You got fucking plenty of propane?
No, that's the thing. I did two nights in a row. I've gone off to try to find, and there's a shortage because somebody, it must be really, really fucking hateful cold somewhere because it ain't to be found around here. Because what I can do, I can, like, years and years ago, a couple of years ago now, our buddy Tom in sunny San Rafael sent us a refillable 1-pound propane tank. And so I can start the evening on that. But if I need a second one, I got to have another because, you know, refill. So I try to keep some of the pre-made 1 pound tanks on hand. And they are not to be had. Not Wally World, not Lowe's, not Tractor Supply, not Rural King, not nobody. And so, no.
Wow.
Yeah, it sucks. Burning the last bottle of propane that I have. Agnes started it up just before the airtime, and we've reached 60 degrees in the studio, which is tolerable for me. But, yeah, 60. And that's 60 up by the ceiling where the atomic clock is hanging, not 60 down here on the floor where it's definitely not 60. But that's not why you called.
You use those green screw-in tanks, is that correct?
Yeah.
The green-looking ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you got, a little buddy?
Yeah, it's a heat buddy.
Yeah, they're very effective.
They are, and they're handy, but they are also inefficient.
Yeah, there's that. And none of the Wood Ace Hardwares or nothing?
Nothing. I mean, Lowe's in Somersville, Walmart in Somersville, Fayetteville Oak Hill, Fayetteville Lowe's, Oak Hill Rural King, Somersville Rural King. I have looked everywhere.
And that, I guess Amazon, you can't get that shipped to you, can you?
I can't imagine. I didn't look, but I can't imagine you could because, you know, explosives.
The gas thing. There's that.
Yeah.
The reason I called is Washington Journal. They're still out there, man. And I'm not trying to send off any negative vibes, but it was quite frightening. Yesterday was so refreshing because they filtered out all the maggots. It wouldn't let Peter Finn was hosting it, and it looked like he may have had a stroke or Bell's palsy or something, but that's just an aside. But they were filtering out. They didn't let any maggot calls. So it was so refreshing. But today, man, they came back with the vengeance. These people are losing their minds, man. They just won't accept reality.
No, like I said, I go back and forth as to, you know, do I feel sorry for these people? Or, you know, do you feel, okay, here's the question, Steve. If we imagine the probably apocryphal story of P.T. Barnum and his This Way to the Egress sign, you know that, right? He set up the sign in the circus, This Way to the Egress, and, you know, the marks didn't realize that egress means exit. And so they'd go through, and then they'd have to pay a nickel to come back into the circus.
Right.
Well, in terms of how sorry do you feel for somebody who just lost their nickel on This Way to the Egress? You see what I mean?
It's hard to wrap your head around. And they were convinced up until he was going to be sworn in that something, you know, seismic shift was going to happen, and he was going to hold power. And they felt like they'd been duped, a lot of these QAnon freaks, you know?
Well, I mean, I had the story yesterday, one of them tweeting, I'm the laughing stock of my entire family. Well, whose fault is that? I mean, if this is one of those things where we're going to try to assign blame, whose fault is that?
Right. If you pay $100 to see the three-headed girl, I mean, that's on you, you know?
Right. Or the baby rattlers. That was the thing. That was the thing on the road coming up the mountain years before I was born. There'd be signs along the road. See the baby rattlers. See the baby rattlers. See the baby rattlers. And people would stop and go in to see the baby rattlers. And they were right there in a glass case. Baby rattles.
And another reason I called it, and again, I'm not trying to spread any negative vibes, but I never did get a clear answer last night because it was an exciting porch, you know. I was just curious, the consensus, Tuesday night, was anybody else kind of sleeping with one eye open?
Oh, yeah, I was. I
was, too.
A lot of
Steve, are you being hyperbolic, you know?
No, a lot of times, Steve, you know, when I go to sleep, I turn my phone off because it just sits there and dings all night.
I was waiting for the lights to go out, and I was like,
yeah.
And I'm so glad he's gone. We don't have to live. At least that element is gone. 11:59 when they deactivated his football. Whew. Exhale, man.
Yeah, that one?
Yeah, that one. Because, you know, he was a cornered rat, and I had no idea what he would do.
And I don't know, Steve, if we're ever going to know, just exactly how far responsible, sane people had to go to keep shit from going sideways.
Right. Right.
I mean, and because we had the story break yesterday of Mike Flynn's brother, Chuck, also a three-star, who was a three-star general. You know, the traitor Mike Flynn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his three-star general brother, Chuck, had a hand in keeping... And remember, it was Mike Flynn who was calling for martial law, calling for insurrection, calling for overthrow of the government. And then, lo and behold, his active duty brother, Chuck, the three-star general, is part and parcel of the decision not to let the National Guard go down and deal with the insurrectionists. I don't know if we're ever going to know, and I'm not trying to create some sort of new left analog QAnon. I don't know if we're ever going to know how deep the corruption I don't know if we're ever going to know how near we got to disaster.
Right.
It's kind of like the story of that one Soviet colonel or whatever who was on duty one day when the Soviet alert system told them that the United States had launched missiles. And we only found out about it decades later. But dude had the common sense to say, you know, it's probably glitch in glorious Soviet missile detection system. I'll wait and see if Murmansk goes up.
And
it didn't, but we were seconds from a global thermonuclear catastrophe.
Exactly. And even if we have the technology to zap it out of the stratosphere, it'll still cripple your grid.
Oh, hell
yeah. Yeah, and you could be in the dark for years, you know, and I just don't know the outcome of that. It's frightening if you try to wrap your head around it, but we dodged a bullet, and we can put that behind us, and I'm looking forward to some boring for a while, and I would suggest that you, Randy, Tom, Stephanie, all y'all, take some time off, man. Jesus Christ, man.
Well, if we can get the GoFundMe campaign to get past 10 grand, I'll be taking some time off. Not that I necessarily want it.
I know. Well, you got things you got to do.
I'll be taking some time off and drinking dinner through a straw for a week or so. Yeah.
Well, you like yogurt, so there's that.
Can't. Loaded with potassium.
No? Oh, Jesus, Bob. What the hell are you going to do, man?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see. No tomato soup, potassium. No tomato soup. That's got potassium, too. No bananas. No mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes used to be. Nope. Load of potassium.
No potato chips?
No. Hell no.
God damn.
I mean.
Blobbing. What the hell?
Oh, it sucks. That part of it sucks. And
well, all right. Let's try this. What can you eat?
Shit that doesn't have potassium in it. It's a matter of reading the fucking labels.
Well, give me an example.
Let's see. I can have pizza, but not with a mouthful of stitches.
No. You could puree it, though, couldn't you?
Not really.
No.
But basically, it's just a matter of reading labels and say, potassium? No, good. So, I mean, I have no pop anymore. I've become quite fond of these fruit-flavored seltzers. You know, no calories, no sugar, no nothing. It's water that somehow or another tricks you into thinking it tastes like blueberries or cherries or whatever. Going through that left and right. And I have to because diuretic.
There's that, yeah.
Yeah.
Peeing all the time.
Yeah, do you have any idea what a challenge 3 hours of radio in this chair is with a diuretic in your system, please?
Oh, my goodness, man. Why don't you get one of them? You know what I'm talking about. They use them at the hospital. Hell, nobody will know. You don't have a camera on.
No, but I don't want the sound effects.
You're not going to hear it. Put a damper down there or something. I'm trying to help you here, man.
I know. I'm just a little ray of sunshine. Yeah. Things like grits are apparently not a problem. So I have Agnes kindly fixes me red eye gravy hot pepper cheese grits every morning, and I enjoy those. But man, those metabolically grits don't stick to you.
Do you like grits?
Oh, I love grits.
Do idea. I had a friend from up north come visit me, and I took him to the Waffle House. And he said, I've always wanted to try grits. I'm like, okay, Kevin, I'll give them a try. He didn't put anything on them. He took a mouthful of them. It was hilarious. He said, grits, yeah, that's a good name for them. So, I guess it's one of those you had to be there kind of moments, but it was hilarious, man.
Yeah, no, feeding grits to Northerners is always fun.
Right, right. Because you got to put butter or sugar. Like, you know, you can be creative.
Now, I've never been a sweeten the grits kind of person.
All right, what's your preferred
method? Well, okay, this will probably get my Southern card pulled, but
I won't tell anyone.
A couple of years ago, and I remember David in South Carolina, Stan was like, "Yo, I'm getting them down here," but Quaker came out with Red Eye Gravy Instant Grits, ham and red eye gravy, and it's got little bits of dried real ham and some sort of red eye gravy flavoring to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Karen makes them like that.
And they're fantastic. So Agnes will fix me two packages of those with two slices of hot pepper cheese, stir it up, let the cheese melt, and it's heavenly. I eat it just about every day. Cheeses apparently aren't loaded with potassium. Milk, though, is.
Cheese, I find it hard to believe, but I believe you.
I read the stinking labels. That's all I can tell you.
You have to, yeah. And the potassium, is that has something to do with the medication you're taking?
Yeah, obviously. What happens is, well, it's two medications. The blood pressure medicine that I've taken since I was 30 is potassium sparing.
Oh, yeah. Potassium channel blockers, yeah.
It's an ACE inhibitor.
ACE inhibitors, yeah.
Yeah. Which they say is actually good prophylaxis for the Rona, as if they know anything. So I take an ACE inhibitor, and onto that we've added this drug called spironolactone, which is a diuretic, but it also suppresses testosterone. And so those two taken together, and what happens if you get too much potassium, you can get something called hyperkalemia, which means you have too much potassium.
Ugh.
And you can look it up. It's no fun.
Was you get tachycardia and all that?
More like preventricular contractions, PVCs, you know, heart palpitations. They suck. Because, you know, you'll be toddling along and all of a sudden, boom, boom. You know, it's like there's a rim shot in your chest. You know.
Wow. Interesting factoid. Anything that ends in a RIL is an ACE inhibitor. Did you know that? Lisinopril?
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, yep.
And I mean, in terms of blood pressure, it works great.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Anything ends in LOL, metoprolol.
Yep.
Or, you know, they're beta blockers, which actually blocks the signal between your brain and your heart and slows it down. But med talk with Blobbin. I bet the radios are clicking off left and right here, man.
No, let's go watch cartoons.
Yeah. Let's go watch the paint dry somewhere, man.
No, you actually make it quite interesting, and I appreciate it.
Oh man, well, hey man, thanks for carrying us through this four shit show for the last 4 years. Gosh, couldn't have made it without you.
Well, I ain't going anywhere. But yeah. And the thing is, as much as I like to focus on the upbeat stuff, and we've got upbeat stuff.
We do. We can get boring for a little while.
But, you know, the maggots ain't going away.
Oh, hell no. You know, they bust my bubble, like I said, when I tuned in to Washington Journal this morning. They're out there in full force, and they're pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
They are livid. They're just besides themselves.
Oh, you got to – okay, Steve, you got to help out here because I just got a question from Flavio, and this may be a tough one, so feel free to help. How are grits different from polenta? I love polenta. Polenta is just cornmeal. Grits are not cornmeal.
Grits are from corn, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, cornmeal's from corn. But right. Cornmeal is just ground corn. Grits are a different
It's hominy, thing. Isn't it?
Yeah, they're hominy grits. You have to make this.
Yes.
And the way you make the hominy is it's actually, and what an awesome freaking word this is.
Hominy?
No. No, it's the process by which you get hominy, and it's brilliant, and I never cease to be amazed at how curious and how inventive human beings can be. You know, at our best, we're some pretty neat little primates. At our worst, well, you know, you get Trump. But
there's that.
Yeah. But so, you know, 10,000 years ago or so, when the people in Mesoamerica were had succeeded in taking this grass that just looks like fucking grass. It looks like the Johnson grass that you cut down in a field. But they carefully planted it and replanted it and replanted it. It's the most brilliant piece of agricultural engineering in the entire history of humanity, I think. Because eventually you wind up with what we know as corn, maize, you know, big ears, you know, kernels, all of that from something that looks like a noxious weed. And what they found out is if you just eat the corn, it really doesn't have much in the way of nutritional value. But if you take the dried corn grains and soak them in lye and then rinse them, it frees up this amazing cornucopia of nutritional wonderfulness, because maize is by far and away far more nutritious in terms of the load that it carries than wheat, barley, rice. And the process by which one, and it, among other things, it unleashes folic acid in the corn. I think it's folic acid, pretty sure. And that entire process is called nixtamalization. 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 And it frees up
nutrients.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was developed and invented by people who did not have draft animals, did not use the wheel much beyond children's toys, you know, indigenous Americans. And for instance, if you make a tortilla with non-nixtamalized corn, it's not nearly as good as a tortilla made with corn that's been through the nixtamalization process. And so to bring it, I love how you do this to me. But if you, if you make your hominy.
Hominy.
And then you grind them, you get grits. Whereas if you just, you know, grind corn, it's a different thing.
I see.
I misspoke. It's nixtamalization. There's no extra N in there.
Nixtamalization.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up. Well, before I skate, just a suggestion. When you have your downtime right now, and I'm not trying to plug Bezos, but his music service is given 3 months free. And they have just about any song that you've ever heard or want to hear, past, present, it's there, man. So it'd be a good time to catch up on some of your deep cuts, you know?
Oh, yeah. Excellent. And, you know, now we're getting suggestions. Through a straw, Steve in New York says, and this is going to speak to your heart, Steve, your fellow fraternity of Steve brother, says, things you can have through a straw. Rum? Bourbon?
Bourbon.
Scotch? Irish whiskey?
That works.
Chocolate?
Might burn the gum. Might
beer?
Burn the choppers a little.
Wine? What's the problem?
Yeah, well, you get a sore, you pour alcohol on it, right? Works for me. Shit.
Well, you know, sometimes you want to take some disinfectant inside the body.
Put an ultraviolet light up your bum. What the hell? But Miss Karen's reaching out to me. I better see what she wants, man.
All right. So, yeah, don't keep Miss Karen waiting. Tell her, please, that we love her and say the same thing to little Cletus for us.
Always a pleasure, Blobbin, and you take care and love you, friend.
Oh, I love you, man. You take care. Right. Be good.
All right.
Bye. It's our buddy Steve calling from Georgistan, and somebody is on the stress line. Let's find out who. Yeah,
hey,
go ahead.
Hey, Bob. Happy Thursday. Hey, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia. Happy Thursday to you, Bob.
Oh, well, happy Thursday to you, Reggie. How are you?
Well, it's wet. It's wet over here in Decatur, Georgia. I hope it's dry from where you are.
No, no, it's sloppy. Everything squishes.
Right. Well, now that you know, now that Joe's finally fully and truly inaugurated and officially our brand new president of the United States of America, we want him to do all the things that he's going to do. You know, speed up the vaccine delivery for COVID-19, you know, get it out there as quickly and as soon as possible.
That's the hope.
Not just for this country, for the whole entire planet. Reverse our economy, turn it right back around to what it was when Barack Obama was there.
We're going to see probably a repeat of what Barack Obama had to face. With every Democrat of the last 30 years, from Clinton through Obama to now Biden, you've got Republicans, Reggie. You've got Republicans who have done everything in their power to make sure that America doesn't get any better. Because if you're a Republican, life is better when people are poorer.
Mm. You mean like the tortoise? Who thought he could beat the hare, this tortoise? You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, sure.
This tortoise, who thought he could beat the hare, but in this case, the hare won. I'm talking about the hare being Joe Biden.
Yeah. Yeah, but, well, he was certainly
Number
faster.
Number three, go ahead.
He was certainly faster. He was certainly faster than the two-legged pumpkin.
Right. Number three, and I'm sure he'll do this. You know, don't give these Republican GOP assholes, or as you would say, the for-profit media, any verbal ammunition, if you will. You know what I'm talking about, Bob.
Yeah.
Don't fuck up. In other words, that's what I'm saying. Don't no gaffes, no slip up, no fuck up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because you know they'll go after him until for now and beyond to infinity and forever. Right.
Right.
He's going to get it. That will only give SNL more verbal ammunition to mock him. You know, SNL and the news media, too. And and knowing him and knowing Joe, I'm sure that Joseph R. Biden is not going to pull a Donald J. Trump and wind up being on television each and every single day because he's too busy working for us, the American people.
Well, hopefully he won't be on TV. Hopefully he won't be on TV every day, Reggie. Because, but then again, we're talking about the for-profit media. I mean, Zuckerberg is already considering whether to give him back his Facebook page.
Why? What does he want it or need it for? Why?
Well, he's not president. He's not president anymore, Reggie. So you know.
Yeah.
And there's no election to lie about. Except the last one.
Well, why would MAGA Zuckerberg, as you call him? I call him MAGA Zuckerberg.
Facebook. Reggie, Facebook, Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Same.
Oh, Zuckerberg. Well, yeah. So he could, you know. So he was crying because that his boyfriend got banned, permanently banned, and I hope they stick to that, you know. But, you know, who knows? They should have done it 4 years ago, but, you know, better late than never, right?
One hopes.
Right, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah. They should have done it a long time ago, man. And four, you know, I'm sure that he'll inspire the American people to do better, much better. I'm talking about President Biden now. And reverse everything that you know who did. You know what I'm saying? Reverse
right.
Everything.
Well, they're trying. The 10 executive orders today and, what, 17 yesterday, 14?
Yeah. I hope they keep plugging it.
It's going to take time. But the thing is, they've used their time wisely. This is policy stuff that they've known that they wanted to do since he started running. So, for instance, ending drilling in Anwar, good.
That's one.
Trying to undo the damage that's already been done to Bear's Ears and Grand Escalante, that's two. The protections that have been put back in place relative to the trans community, that's three, four, and five. What he's trying to do in terms of being saner and better about our response to the virus is, my God, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
And you know, it wasn't lifting the Muslim ban, stopping construction on the stupid wall. I mean, there's a lot to like here. I said, I said all along, Reggie, that the man, the person doesn't make the presidency. The presidency makes the person.
The presidency makes the person.
If that person is humble enough to recognize the gravity of the situation, which the previous occupant was not. You know, the only reason he was ever president was to try to plunder the treasury of the United States.
And
all of his bullshit about make America great again, that was just cover for the robbery.
We should burn those hats. Those MAGA hats, we should burn them.
Well, I don't think you'd probably get in trouble with the law if you took somebody's MAGA hat away and set fire to it. I mean, that's stealing, Reggie.
All right. Well, what about the tariffs concerning China? Is he going to lift is he going to lift them? Is he going to get rid of them?
I suspect what his trade reps will do is try to bring things back to status quo ante, just as may be the case with the Iran nuclear deal. That would be a wise thing to do. I got a giggle yesterday. China gave Joe Biden at least this is how I view it, Reggie. China gave Joe Biden an inauguration gift. They put in place. They put in place a travel ban against a bunch of maggots, including Mike Pompeo. He can't go to China. He can't. Mike Pompeo is not welcome in China.
You think it's going to stick?
The Chinese can make it stick. Yeah, the Chinese can make it stick. It's their freaking country.
Right. Well, because if he tries to go over there, will they be arrested or sent back? If they broke that law.
What law?
That prevents them from coming to China.
Mike Pompeo is not going to go to China and say, "Damn it, let me in."
Right.
They may mistake him for a Uyghur or a member of Falun Gong, and the next thing you know, Mike will be minus a kidney or two.
Oh God, they like that? Are they like that?
The Chinese?
I didn't know China.
Oh God, Chinese! Yeah. The Chinese government has built massive concentration camps for Uyghurs, a Muslim religious minority in China.
Yeah, I didn't know that, Bob. I didn't know that, Bob. And we also have to unite, for this is the United, not divided, but the United States of America, as Joe, his wife Gail, and Kamala, and her husband would all want us to. We could be a whole hell of a lot better than what we are or were. Right, Bob? And, he has to do something about, police brutality, the laws of this country, concerning that. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Yeah, I do.
We have to re-examine, this country. And I hope he reverses all the pardons that Donald Trump gave out. Can he do that, Bob?
No, he can't do that, Reggie. No, can't do that.
Oh, damn. Nuts. I was hoping he could, but okay. But we want to make sure that, and we got to tighten up security, right? Period. I mean, thank God nothing jumped off. You know, thank God nothing jumped off yesterday. Thank God nothing happened yesterday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm hoping D.C. returns to something resembling what it was before January 6th, because even then it was an armed camp, and the seat of government of a free people should not be, you know, awash in military carrying automatic weapons. And in fact, some of the fences are right. The fences are already coming down, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, but we don't want this to happen again, Bob. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm afraid of. Remember, we got psychos living in on this planet, unfortunately.
But you're always going to have those. A free nation cannot live in perpetual fear of some idiot or gang thereof.
Right. Right.
And maybe by the time the prosecutions are done, these maggots will figure out that they were badly used. I mean, some of them were complaining, even as Nitwit Nero was heading out of town, that they didn't get a pardon after they engaged in the insurrection. They thought they'd be pardoned. They thought they would be pardoned by Trump for attacking the Capitol.
You mean that mullet head Joe Fixit or whatever his name was? Is that idiot?
Bunches of them. There were hundreds, if not thousands, involved in that attack, Reggie.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, people could have, like you said, five people were murdered, senselessly murdered.
Well, I don't know that they were all murders. I know that the Capitol police officer who was beaten to death with a fire extinguisher, that was murder.
Yeah, that was murder. The officer broken into.
Anybody who committed anything resembling a felony while that was going on needs to be charged with felony murder and dealt with accordingly.
Yeah, I heard that a woman who stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop has been prosecuted.
Yeah, and she says, no, I didn't do that. That was my boyfriend overreacting.
I didn't know her boyfriend looked like a woman. Did you, Bob?
Well,
that
no.
Mirror, I saw that crack.
No, ahead, thank you. She said her boyfriend dropped the dime on her because he panicked.
Right. Well, that's what punks do when they get caught, right? That's exactly what punks do when they get caught. I saw on the internet last week that there was a cracked mirror, you know. Somebody cracked a mirror, you know, in the state capitol. They're going to have to replace that and everything else. And I know that Speaker Pelosi had to replace her laptop. I know she had to do that since hers was stolen. And could you believe or imagine God, Jesus, and heaven only know what information is on her on her stolen laptop?
Who knows?
Can you imagine what they could do with that? Yeah, exactly. Who knows? You know, imagine what they can do with that. You know, they could hack into a personal laptop at home, right? You know, sending threats to her and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah. You think after this, they're going to need protections from now on when they go back to work? Are they going to be able to feel safe?
No. If something like this looks like it's going to happen again, hopefully we've got a competent administration in charge that won't look the other way and try to encourage it.
Right. Of course, I seriously doubt that the Biden administration would do such a thing, but, you know, they would condemn it as it should have been condemned.
Well, you might be interested to know that, among other people, Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, he's fresh out of fucks to give. And so he is actually calling on the federal prosecutors involved to use the RICO statute, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, to drill down and find all the fine. Well, I'll tell you, to drill down and find all the financial sources of the insurrection.
Well, who's backing these people up?
He tweeted earlier, follow the breadcrumbs and follow the money. Find the ringleaders, kingpins, and funders. Use civil racketeer influence and corrupt organizations. Act as necessary. And see, yeah. Sheldon Whitehouse used to be a U.S. attorney, so he knows of which he speaks. And that's probably causing some maggots to shit themselves a little bit or a lot. Because, for instance, we know that one of the backers of the insurrection was the Republican Attorneys General Association.
Right. They should all be prosecuted before the full extent of the law, right, Bob?
Yeah.
They should be prosecuted. Yeah, they should be prosecuted. And their assets and accounts should be frozen, correct? Right. Or something. Like that. So that, I mean, you can't, like you say, you can't have an organization without the head of an organization. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Yeah.
That's like trying to have a mafia without a mob boss, right? It wouldn't work.
Somebody's got to be in charge.
Right. Yes, exactly. Somebody has to be in charge. And
of course, this takes me back to my previous call that all of this needs to be under the umbrella of a single special counsel. And no, yeah. there was not a bunch of sensitive information on the laptop. As James in Illinois informs us,
thank God.
It was strictly used for Zoom meetings, nothing the Russians couldn't get on the App Store for free.
Oh, thank God. But he's still going to have to replace it. You know, that's cost.
Well, they do, but I think we can afford that. The greater risk is what's being...
Yeah.
What's being, you know, the offense to the dignity, the peace and dignity of the Capitol. Reggie, I got a bunch of calls coming in. I'm going to go to the next one. Thanks, man. It's good to talk to you. You stay warm, you hear?
Yeah, you do too, Bob. And I hope we can turn this country back around. But under President Joe Biden, his administration, I think we can. You know, hope and change, and yes, we can. Just like
It is not the work of a single presidential term or even two. I keep saying it, and I will continue to say it is the work of a generation. Reggie, you take care, my friend. Somebody, Reggie, calling from Decatur, Georgia, and let's see here. I think we have. I don't know. Is the great grits debate going to continue? We got Flavio. Hey, Flavio.
Hey, man. Long time no talk.
It's been a little bit.
Yeah. Wow. This is the first time I'm talking with Robin.
Yes, it is. It is.
How you doing?
I'm okay. You know, it's kind of like what I was telling Steve. You know, got some medication issues, but they'll get sorted out at some point. It's just a little frustrating.
It's just awesome. It's an honor, really. To be speaking with Robin. And I just want to take issue with the cornmeal characterization. No. I get my yellow corn grits at the co-op, and they're not degerminated. These are actual grits.
Yeah, that's whole grain grits, so to speak.
Yeah. So the cornmeal doesn't quite do, it's not, you know, cornmeal is kind of mush, and polenta is more than mush. Polenta is so versatile. I mean, you can make it hard, you can make it soft, you can make it in between al dente. It's, like, amazing. You can, like, brown it, toast it. But yeah, so I'm thinking.
Well, you may have heard Dan Fisher and me discussing the movie Mate One. Okay. So there's a scene in that where the hillbillies feeling badly for the new Italian immigrants. This one old lady is trying to be a decent Christian. You know, so of course she wards off the evil eye before she goes over to speak to the Italians. Mm-hmm. You know, because hillbilly superstition, but you know, it's not not like they didn't have their own. And so she takes him a bag of, I think the line is something like, here's you some cornmeal. You need to feed them babies. And the Italian immigrant lady says, ah, polenta. And she says, and here's you some ramps. Adds flavor. You know, because she's talking louder because she's speaking to someone who doesn't speak English, naturally. So it's so American.
Ramps, ham.
Ramps. And the Italian lady says, ah, olio.
Oh, those. Okay.
Garlic.
Olio.
Garlic.
Olio, garlic. Allison, right.
Yeah, because what ramps are is... ramps is one of the first green things that peeks through the frozen earth in spring. It's a tonic. It makes garlic run away. It is so it's got the, it kind of looks, it's got a broadleaf top and it kind of,
like garlic chives.
No. It's got a broadleaf top and it's about the size of a green onion, but it's more like a leek. And then the bottom is like a green onion. But, for instance, there was, and I've told this story before, but there was a great publisher named Jim Comstock in West Virginia who published something for years and years and years called The West Virginia Hillbilly. And he mailed the hillbilly all over the world because people absolutely adored it. It was a wonderful paper. And one time, just to give folks a little bit of a feeling of home, he dumped maybe an ounce of ramp juice in his printer's ink before his run. And the postal inspector got hold of him and told him if he ever pulled a stunt like that again, his mailing privileges would be revoked with extreme prejudice because that ramp juice was so pungent that even a single hillbilly in one bag of mail would stench the entire bag. So ramps are not to be played with, but and in fact,
ramp is stronger than garlic.
Oh yes, like plutonium is stronger than uranium.
Oh my!
And they grow up.
They're the same family, but they're different.
And they're wide. Yeah, they grow. They grow in Wisconsin too. Only my northern Wisconsin and indigenous friends up there refer to them as wild onions. They're ramps.
And they're ramps, huh?
And the word ramp comes from an old Celtic word.
Okay.
And in fact, out the road from me is a little former community. My grandfather used to be the postmaster out there back in the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
But the name of that community, and it's an old English Welsh name, Ramsey, R-A-M-S-E-Y.
Okay.
And it comes from a Welsh word, and I'm probably mispronouncing it as I do all foreign words, no matter how hard I try.
No, you did audio perfect.
Oh, thank you. Ramsech. And Ramsech means field of garlic.
Oh, wow. So it's like an intent.
And so Ramsech becomes ramps.
Wow.
And I mean, I love them. God, I love them. It's one of those things that makes you look forward
to
spring.
I love bulbous plants.
You can chop up. You can chop up a little bit of ramps into your cornbread, and it's amazing. You can chop them up into a just regular cornbread with a bowl of brown beans, some ramps cut up in them. And around here, like civic organizations in the spring, will hold ramp dinners.
That's awesome.
And it's one of those not misery, but it's a shared misery experience because nobody worries about stinking of ramps if everybody's sitting there consuming them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the thing is...
And they are so good for you.
They are. I mean, just the cholesterol lowering, the cardiovascular thing. I mean, it's just like everything you read about, you know, I can't get enough bulbous plants. I mean, I
only did it once, Flavio, but I think you would have appreciated it. I need to do it again. But I made once upon a time, I had a bunch of ramps, and you got to clean them carefully, kind of like you do with leeks.
Right.
But I made, you start at the bottom, you know, you're making a cream soup. So you start with a little roux and And I started my roux by mincing up some ramps really, really, really fine, the white parts of it, and sauteed them in the butter, added the flour, made the roux, built up the cream soup, and chopped in asparagus, and made a cream of asparagus and ramp soup, and then the bowl, you know, you take it and you garnish it with little chiffonaded strips of ramp leaf, and it was magic, just magic.
Oh my! It's just, you know.
Oh, and to have some nice toasted, the chewy rustic bread. Ooh.
I just wanted to make sure that you understood that what they sell under the brand Quaker cornmeal, that ain't no grits. That's mush. That's the Germany.
No. Quaker sells cornmeal and Quaker sells grits. The two are wildly different.
Yeah, and cornmeal is not polenta.
It can be cooked that way, but it winds up.
But it's not polenta. Polenta is polenta.
Yeah. But yellow, like yellow, red. Yellow and white doesn't matter. That's just a matter of personal preference.
Yeah. I like yellow, but there's white. But the idea is that it's the gritty part.
And you might be interested to know this, that in the wonderful world of corn, like everything else in this country, white versus yellow corn has a racial component.
Really?
Yes. Because white folks assumed that white corn was better corn.
No.
Yes.
You're kidding me.
Nope. And so, you know, if you want to be highfalutin, you use your white corn meal. For everyday eating, you eat your yeller.
Now, there is an ethnic component to epithets, and the people of the north of Italy call the people of southern Italy Terun.
Terun?
Terun, people of the land.
That kind of runs parallel to the origin of the word pagan.
Yeah, Terun. Okay, but the people of southern Italy call the people of northern Italy Polentoni because they eat polenta.
Polenta eaters, sure, yeah.
Because, you know, it's the Valley of the Po and you know, the Piedmont and...
But there can't be any connection between the Po in Polenta and the Po of the Po River, can there?
No.
I assume the Po... Well, okay, maybe there is, because the Po certainly pre-existed the arrival of maize in Europe, but is that good ground for growing maize?
Yeah.
Okay, so maize. So it becomes...
The Po Valley is riziculture, though.
So maybe polenta does partake of the name Po, the river Po?
I'll have to take a look at that, but I don't think so. But...
I love what you make my brain do sometimes.
But that's what a philologist does. A philologist fillets words.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
But that's a different word too. Don't get them. You know this community. Philates, damn it.
But, no, what I was saying was, God, what a fucking relief.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, there's so much work to be done. There's so much work to be done.
Yeah. I would like to see these sons of bitches, you know, what's that shithead from Jim Schwartz Jordan, please, somebody, you know, get him with a man in his mouth or something. For fuck's sake, I'm sick of that little smarmy coach. You know, and the thing is...
The word you're looking... I don't think I just heard you use it. The word you're looking for here, Flavio, because that's the corner you and I work. The word you're looking for in regard to Jim Shorts Jordan is pissant.
Pissant, yeah. The guy that taught the history class, the senior history class at the at Aquinas and La Crosse, one of them, was a coach.
Sure.
He wasn't the only one who was a coach who taught history. So I can say that because there were like 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, throughout the history of the school. They're always coaches, and they're always dumb as a bag of claw hammers. And then I'm going to mention this because it's important, because history repeats itself, and I know you love history. And this son of a bitch was going on in one of our classes, and I don't know why, because this was a U.S. history class. But, you know, he was a white supremacist, and he wanted to, you know, bring into class this new theory that, according to which the peoples of the tropics were somehow inferior to the people of the Nordic climes because all they had to do is climb up coconut trees and drink coconut milk all day, and, you know, and the people of the north had to endure the cold and never mind the droughts in the south and whatever. And he was just rehashing the Baron de Montesquieu's essay on the inequality of races. You know, which was the same bullshit, you know, the Frenchman, you know, l'essai sur l'inégalité des races, and the essay on the inequality of the races. And it's just like, oh my God, and I'm in high school, and I have a modicum of world culture.
And you do not suffer. I imagine even teenage Flavio did not suffer fools gladly.
No, because
it's a miracle you didn't say, why don't you come over and read The Bumps on Our Heads while you're at it, bub?
Yeah, phrenology. While we're at it, you know, Lombroso, you know, why don't we, you know, but this fucking coach was influencing minds to become, you know, and a lot of the people that were in my cohort are probably maggots now because of this dude, because they didn't have any. I'm spoiled, okay? There's no doubt about it. Even though my family was modest, you know, my mother was a secretary and my dad was a teacher, we're still part of the intelligentsia, and, you know, there were still books in our house, and I still had more education than a fucking coach in Wisconsin because, you know, Portuguese, European, you know, and a family history of literacy.
Yeah, I was going to say, or because respect for learning.
And a family history of literacy that goes back, you know, 500 years, you know. But, you know, I wasn't by no means aristocracy, but I was middle class in Brazil. Okay? We weren't making a lot of money, but I come from an educated family. My mother was from Portugal. My grandmother is from Portugal. And there's something called cultura universal. Universal culture.
Universal culture, yes.
Yeah, and a modicum of, okay, we know the 50 United States. We know their capitals. We know, you know, we have basic notion of geography. We know where Ulaanbaatar is, and that's it's a really cool place. We have, you know, we have a basic knowledge.
But let's be cognizant of something. I mean, you mentioned the French phrase. We have to go back to food porn here in a minute too, because it's generating responses.
Yes, go ahead.
I mean, the Spanish, the Portuguese, English, the Dutch.
I'm gone tonight because I've been withdrawing. I've been in withdrawal since I haven't called in for a long time, so I'm getting a surfeit of it, and I'm going to get my money's worth tonight. Okay.
Okay, that's fine. All the European imperial colonial powers, be it in point of fact, when you get right down to it, the English and the Dutch were late to the game. But the Spanish and the Portuguese, and we all know about the line of demarcation. No, we don't all know about the line of demarcation.
No, we don't.
Even
the Portuguese and the Spanish pretty much divvied the world amongst themselves. Line of demarcation, 370 west of
meanwhile,
the Azores.
Meanwhile, the English are sitting up there going, oh, I say.
Thanks to a papal bull.
Yeah. And when we say papal bull, we really mean papal bull. There was a great deal of hubris and racism involved in the attitudes that led to the line of demarcation. But, you know, it's one of the interesting things that as many indigenous people as the Spanish and Portuguese managed to slaughter, Creole culture had a far better fighting chance, whether it be Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, Brazil, Argentina, Chile, and the rest of the global, the Western Hemisphere South. Creole culture survived far more effectively, even within the stupidities of the racial coding with the quatroons and the octoroons and what have you. When you get right down to it, the English were far better genocidalists.
Oh yeah. No,
and they did it with a real Protestant zeal. And in many ways, I think, as much hell as I give the church and as much hell as the church deserves, you at least had you had clerics who got in the who some of whom threw their bodies on the gears and got in the way of the machine. Yeah,
they were philologists. They were lexicographers.
Bernardo de las Casas.
The father of
anthropology.
Bartolomeo de las Casas. De las Casas.
Yeah, Bartolomeo, sorry.
And Bernardo de Sahagún.
Sahagún, yep. See, I get my Bartolomes and my Bernardos mixed up. They really did.
They were philologists. They were lexicographers. They were scientists, and they had fucking von Humboldt among them. Thank God for von Humboldt.
But meanwhile, in North America, the only thing you've got standing in the way of bloodthirsty Protestantism is a slightly less bloodthirsty Protestantism in the form of Quakerism. You know, I mean, Agnes and I sit around and talk about the Quakers because, you know, her ancestor was thrown out of the Quaker meeting in Philadelphia. And you know, when you've managed to piss the Quakers off. By the way, thank you, Todd, for jumping in and helping out. That knocks us down to 4. Wait, is it 4? No, it's 5. Sorry, the ciphering. 557.50, which is awesome. And I know Todd, the reason I know Todd is giggling because, you know, when you get thrown out by the Quakers and
Todd was Quaker educated, so I know he's hanging on this conversation, but you get a few people that are vaguely similar to the Bernardo de Sahagún's and the Bartolomé de las Casas. One is a painter, Flavio.
Say it again.
One of the people who tried to get in the way of the North American genocide was a painter named George Catlin.
What was he?
A painter.
A painter.
An artiste.
Artiste, okay.
And he went out and visited and lived among the Plains tribes, in the years immediately after the Corps of Discovery went out. Right. And he painted portraits of various members of various tribes before and among, and his story is there's a lot of sadness to his story, but one of the saddest parts is he went to the Mandan people when the smallpox vaccine came out, and he said please, because he'd become friends. And he said, please take the vaccine. And I said, no. The white people have come among us and killed too many of us. We don't need them to kill any more. And shortly after that, a smallpox epidemic raged through the Mandan, and there weren't enough Mandan for them to be a standalone tribe anymore. And they wound up merging with another tribe. And if you've ever seen the Richard Harris movie, A Man Called Horse,
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, you might enjoy it. That's a fictionalized account of a white man's time spent among the Mandan. And it was the Mandan that English people convinced themselves were the long-lost descendants of a Welsh tribe that had been led by a son of Owen Wyneth, named Madoc. North America was absolutely awash in these wild-ass theories because they couldn't conceive that, and I don't know if this happens in
isn't it like Barry Fowl, America BC, that kind of.
Well, I mean, I don't know if this kind of stuff exists within colonialist Portuguese or Spanish culture, but the English began, and you know, their shock troops, the Scots. Began coming up with these theories, and they proliferated because everybody wanted to believe them. The noble savage. And so there was this idea. You know, I say those aren't really Indians. Those are the remnants of the lost tribes of Israel.
Yeah, no, that didn't quite take hold from my reading of history. That didn't quite take hold in the Luso-Hispanian world because.
Ooh, I got a new word to play with: Luso-Hispanian. Damn, I'm gonna put that one on the.
Luso-Hispanic,
I get it. Yeah, Portuguese and Spanish. Yeah. But I'm gonna put that one on the mantle in my Mark Twain collection.
You remember the overproduced, lovely movie, The Mission, with Jeremy Irons.
Oddly enough, I was thinking I have to rewatch that soon.
And the cameo with Daniel Berrigan. I love that movie to death.
The music, the scenery. I wouldn't give to see that little corner of the globe.
Ennio Morricone, and the Iguazu Falls. I mean, just the whole thing. I mean that movie is just. And then
you cry a lot.
And then you cry a lot. And I remember that more than I remember Star Wars, okay, dude?
Yeah, well, no, I can see why. There was a time when I had, two video recorders back in the late 80s, and I had a huge collection of videotaped movies that I'd, copied. Mm-hmm. Because there were just, there were these things, and I had no idea that we'd be able to just stream them. And I wanted to make sure that I always had a copy of The Mission at hand.
Because that's my culture, okay? That's the mission territory between Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina. I mean, those four countries.
Yeah.
And that's history, and that.
Yeah, it's history. Americans certainly. It's history. U.S. Americans certainly don't know, and don't care to. That's the worst part. Don't care to.
And Paraguay, and this is in Open Veins of Latin America by Eduardo Galeano, Paraguay wanted to chart an independent course in the 19th century, okay? And there's a chapter in there about the more of the Triple Alliance between Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay against Paraguay, because Paraguay was the territory of the missions. It wanted to, in its independence, it wanted to protect. It was like the Switzerland of South America. It wanted to protect its indigenous people. It wanted independent development from the European powers. But the British, through their embassies in Rio de Janeiro, Montevideo, Uruguay, Buenos Aires, they intended to bring their railroads and their commerce and their brand of mercenary capitalism to Paraguay, and Paraguay was having none of it.
I bet I know how that turned out.
And so, you know, they demonized the dictator, Solano Lopez, who pretty much wanted to chart an independent foreign policy and was allied with the Germans. The Germans supplied them with, you know, iron and cannons and so forth and so on. And, of course, the Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay ganged up on Paraguay, basically by attacking Uruguay and calling into force a pact of mutual defense between Paraguay and Uruguay. And then the three ganged up on Paraguay and basically decimated the population to the point that to this day there are more women in Paraguay than there are men. Because
Jesus. The things we don't know.
And this was all instigated by the British.
Of course.
We know this because they were the first to declare this.
Well, and that was a function to declare the war. Yeah, go ahead.
According to Eduardo Galeano's book, which is heavily sourced, lots of footnotes, the Buenos Aires Standard, which was the English language newspaper in Buenos Aires, was the first to declare war before there was even a war going on against Paraguay. And we know, so this is how we know, because how do you say it? They denounced themselves by being the first to call for war against Paraguay.
Yeah, they outed themselves.
They outed themselves before there was even a war. And then, you know, you have basically London intriguing in all these South American capitals to basically.
Do you know why? It's not just because the English are assholes. I mean,
because they wanted total hegemony, and they wanted their railroads to penetrate.
Actually, it's kind of the opposite of that, Flavio. It was the unstated policy of the crown that whoever looked to be gaining hegemonic power, they would oppose. They wanted no one in Europe to have absolute dominance over the continent, because they were little island nations.
No. Germany wasn't wasn't dominant in Paraguay.
I didn't say the Germans. I said the English. I didn't say anything about Germany. When Spain rose, England opposed Spain. When France rose, England opposed France. When Germany rose, England opposed Germany.
No, what I'm saying is Paraguay wanted to be to chart its own independent course.
I understand that.
And they didn't want, they wanted to protect the indigenous. They had, you know, the mission, that movie had some grain of truth in it, in that both Portuguese and Spanish Jesuits basically kept the white man from the indigenous people. I mean, they had sentinels.
Yeah, they tried. They tried. I was going to ask you.
And
that
anybody that tried to penetrate into the Guarani territory, you know, the Jesuits would shoot them down. You know, I mean, they tried to protect the Indians. They did.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. But what I was saying about British policy is absolutely factual. But I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you in particular, the book, tell me the title again.
The book is Las Venas Abiertas de America Latina.
The Open Veins of Latin America.
Of Latin America.
Is it available in a decent English translation?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, okay. That's what I needed. I needed to know that.
There have been like 20, 30, 50 editions of it. In English and
see,
yeah, I mean, it's such a popular. It's by Eduardo Galeano, who died, you know, maybe 5 years ago. Uruguayan journalist, very wonderful. I mean, that entire book will give you the length, width, and breadth of Latin American history, and it's very well written. Very well written, and I recommend it. I'll send you a copy.
Oh, I'm writing it down here. You don't need to do that.
I'll get you a copy.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. I was going to ask you, and this is fiction, but it's got a ton of historical research behind it. And when you think about all like making a movie of the mission, you're making the mission. And it's one of my favorite pieces of historical fiction. The original language in it is English, but there's a ton of Nahuatl words in it.
Nahuatl.
It's my understanding you do not pronounce the L. It's a silent L. I pronounced the L for years until I got corrected.
I thought it was Nahuatl.
I don't know.
No.
For instance, the throwing spear tool.
Again, I'm not Mexican.
Yeah, I always thought that was an atlatl, but it's an atlat. Because the last L just kind of.
You know, chocolatl?
Yeah, chocolat. that's how come it becomes chocolate. Chocolat.
Okay.
Maybe
a glottal stop?
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is. The little lovely green fruit that I can't eat anymore that makes guacamole.
The tomatillo?
No, the aguacate. Because you don't pronounce the L, the avocado.
Avocado.
Yeah. But anyway, there's a book.
That's another reason why I can't stand British English. Too many fucking glottal stops, okay?
Hold on, because I want to finish this thought.
Which is also why I can't stand Russell Brand. I mean, any accent like that, and it just, okay, drives me to distraction.
I understand. So,
I much prefer the upper Midwestern, American, neutral.
I'm a Southerner, can't help it.
I like Bill Moyers too, but at least it's not glottal stops, okay? Glottal stops are fucking.
Let me get to the book here, because I think if you haven't read it, if you ever get your hands on it, you'll be transfixed. And it was published in 1980. The author is Gary Jennings, and it's simply called Aztec. And it's sensationalist, but historical fiction is. But it is
I love historical fiction.
It is a brilliant portrayal of pre-Cortez Valley of Mexico and the Triple Alliance and all the peoples and cultures. And it's kind of a it's protagonist. It's all told first person. And if you don't laugh and cry reading those 1,100 pages in paperback, there's something wrong with you. And along,
I don't mind.
Along the way, you will pick up a hell of a lot of Nahuatl vocabulary.
I read the seven volumes of Bartolomé de las Casas' history.
He researched the novel Jennings did for 10 years, and he lived in Mexico to do it. And he relied on de las Casas and Sahagún and other real actual sources from the colonial period. And he
I actually read, not to boast, but I'll boast anyway, 7 volumes, and it was edited by the premier Texan Latin Americanist, Lewis Hanke of the University of Texas at Austin. It's still at UW La Crosse's library. And I read all 7 volumes in medieval Spanish. I love it.
Oh, God, that had to be fun.
It was. It looked like Portuguese.
That's funny. So that's funny all by itself. But Aztec, that's all it's called, Aztec.
Aztec, and it's Jennings?
Yeah, Gary Jennings.
Gary Jennings.
And Aztec. it's got a delightful backstory to it, because once you've read it, you'll ask yourself, how in the name of God has this never been a movie? And now, in the age of the Netflix miniseries, why isn't this in production? Because things that tell stories from marginalized communities are a very hot item right now.
Can we go lowbrow?
In a moment. The backstory on this is that Dino De Laurentiis bought the rights to 2 books. One of them was Aztec, and the other was Dune. Dune.
And the other was?
Dune.
Dune.
By Frank Herbert. And the Mexican government was absolutely thrilled to and offered him their complete cooperation, extras, what have you, location shooting, anything you wanted. And in the end, he decided he wanted to do Dune because he had David Lynch, and Lynch had this vision for Dune, and Dune had a backstory of previous people trying to make it, and so Aztec never got made. And
oh, that's sad.
The thing is, since it does partake of history, we kind of know how it ends, but when you read it, you'll start laughing and crying within the first chapter, because it's broken up into segments that are opened by a letter from the Roman Catholic Archbishop to the Spanish King Charles, because King Charles has commissioned that the Archbishop shall prepare a history of the indigenes. And the characterizations, the language, everything will just get all over you. Now, before we go lowbrow, I do need to go back to food porn for a moment. Because back when we were talking about ramps, I had a note.
And polenta?
But ramps. Tom in sunny San Rafael said, about your ramps food porn. Now you're giving me ideas. How about potato ramp soup? Hillbilly vichyssoise. It's been made. I've made it, and it's freaking fantastic. It's absolutely delicious. You know, first get some ramps, and then But that's, that's just yummy. And in fact, I had a note from Barbara who said, my grandmother grew up in Glen Jean, West Virginia, and I know exactly where that is, until her mother died when she was 10 years old. She loved onions and said even as a small child, she used to hunt for wild onions growing on the hills, wash them in the creek, and eat them. And I'm wondering if they could have been ramps. I think they probably were. However, when she was sent to Virginia, she used to eat the onions they grew on the farm like most people eat apples. She was the only one in the household that never caught diphtheria or the Spanish flu when those outbreaks occurred, and she lived to be 99 years old and was very seldom sick with colds or any other disease. Yeah, that was ramps.
And that's the other thing. They are potent, what is the word?
Antioxidants?
And not antioxidants, but they
antivirals?
Antivirals, and they ward off disease. They're just so
tonics. Yeah, it's literally a spring tonic food. That's what they're called around here. It's a tonic food. But the other thing that's interesting out of that though is like when I was a kid growing up in Alabama, in spring the whole yard comes up in green onions. They look like little green onions. They don't have a broad leaf. They're a straight up, just like an onion grows up out of the ground, and they are inedible. They're horrible. And the difference between, and those are wild onions, as compared to the ramps, which are more like wild garlic or wild leeks. So there's that.
Robin, I just wanted to put this on the record that, I totally agree with you that Nancy Pelosi gets short shrift. Okay?
Yeah.
So you'll get no argument from me. I think she's a brilliant strategist, and she knows how to count votes, and I totally agree with you.
And but it was...
Would you agree with me that Chuck Schumer is a fucking doormat?
He has been in the past, but it's hard not to be a doormat when you are the minority leader, because you're not leading. There's nothing much to lead on.
And I just wanted to say that if he is planning to be the doormat that he was before, when we have any semblance of an aegis, then I will not mince words. I do not want to hear any whining. It's on the Dems then. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry.
Well, I don't want to see any capitulating. I would like to see him go in and look, you know, the vice president in the modern era spends a lot of time traveling, and it's actually kind of one of the cool things about the job. John Adams said that being vice president was the most useless thing he had ever experienced being in his life. But vice presidents have become more active and taken more of a role. You know, hell, Dick Cheney, before he dicks you, was actually president of the United States, for all intents and purposes. But I would like to see Kamala Harris come in, sit down in that chair, and exercise the powers of the vice president.
President of the Senate.
Bingo. And exactly. and I'd love to see her try Donald Trump. I'd love to see her preside over the trial of Donald Trump, because among other things, she is a former prosecutor and a former attorney general of the single largest individual economy in the United States. With some of the most complex legal systems, you really couldn't ask for a better presiding judge than Kamala Harris.
No. And she's not going to be a doormat.
I hope not. But it all depends on how long it takes Joe Biden to get over this notion of this. And I'm not crapping on Joe Biden. But, you know, he's got this stated kumbaya policy that he's going to wait and let the Republicans prove that he can't afford to use. And that's going to take a lot of time. And, you know, when they shit on his $1.9 million or $1.9 trillion stimulus package, that'll be a start. And the question is, will he then use his bully pulpit as president to go out and say and do exactly what he did in the Georgia campaign? Well, you know, the reason you're not getting the extra $1,600 to put with the six and make 2,000 is because of, and then name names, Mitch McConnell, Pat Toomey, and don't stop till you're done naming Republicans. And
yes, please.
And maybe they learn somehow. I don't know. And, you know, Jimmy in the Great Northwest, speaking of Nancy Pelosi, she knows the game. She's hard. You might, in fact, enjoy this. I've got a piece of audio here. There was a press conference today, and some poor member of the for-profit media decided to ask her a really stupid question.
Oh, that's great.
It didn't end well, Flavio. Here it goes.
I love it.
Yes.
Thank you. You mentioned unity and the message of unity that came out yesterday. Are you at all concerned about moving forward with an impeachment trial could undercut that message and alienate Republican supporters of the president?
No. Like, no, I'm not worried about that. The fact is, the president of the United States committed an act of incitement of insurrection. I don't think it's very unifying to say, oh, let's just forget it and move on. That's not how you unify. Joe Biden said it beautifully. If you're going to unite, you must remember. And we must bring this in. And it, look, that's our responsibility, to uphold the integrity of the Congress of the United States. That's our responsibility, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that is what we will do. And just because he's now gone, thank God, that you don't say to a president, do whatever you want in the last months of your administration. You're going to get a get-out-of-jail card free because people think we should make nice and forget that people died here on January 6th, that the attempt to undermine our election, to undermine our democracy, to dishonor our Constitution. No, I don't see that at all. I think that would be harmful to unity.
Madam Speaker, a year ago in the context of the last impeachment trial, you said that you cannot have a trial without documents and witnesses.
That's right.
I'm wondering what kind of trial you'd like to see your impeachment managers put forward. And is that part of what you're waiting for, some kind of guidance from the Senate about how they'll conduct themselves before you send that article over?
Well, let me just say this. We were talking about two different things. We're talking about a phone call that the president had as one part of it, that people could say, I need evidence. This year, the whole world bore witness to the president's incitement, to the execution of his call to action, and the violence that was used. So I, believe it or not, don't take part in the deliberations of delivering, making the, preparing for the trial. That's up to the managers. But I do see a big difference between something that we all witnessed versus what information you might need to substantiate an article of impeachment based on large part on a call that the president made and described as perfect. It was perfectly unconstitutional. This is different, but again, it's up to them to decide how we go forward, when we go forward. It will be soon. I don't think it will be long, but we must do it.
Pretty impressive, wouldn't you say, Flavio?
Thank God.
Tough
Thank
as nails.
God.
And guess what?
Tough
She's
as nails.
Yep. Donnie Dimwit's gone. Hard-ass Nancy is still there.
No, I had no problem with her remaining, and I'm just worried about Chuck Schumer.
Well, with good reason, but again, let's at least bear in mind that, as I said, when you're minority leader, all you can do in the Senate is basically keep your votes counted and keep your caucus in line and make sure that nobody breaks ranks. You're not going to change anything.
But wasn't Mitch McConnell minority leader for a time?
Yeah, he was.
And in that capacity, did not he thwart many a Democratic initiative?
Yes, he did. Because he plays blunt force politics.
And that's what I'd like to see our side do for fucking once.
Right. And if we can get, you know, one senator more than 50, actually two, and that leaves us with 51 and Joe Manchin. Because, you know, he makes these noises with his mouth every now and then that make you, you know, he knows what the right thing to do is. He just struggles doing it sometimes. But you get three senators, you'll see Schumer maybe act that way. But the other part of it is McConnell is a tyrant. All right. No one loves the tyrant. And for instance, you know, now that he's out of office, Harry Reid is saying, you know, time for the filibuster to go. But he was loved by his caucus when he was majority leader because he didn't really make anybody do anything. He wasn't a tyrant. And that's what made it so hard to get anything through when we had allegedly 60 votes. Because he never had 60 votes. It was August before Al Franken was seated. And after that, the 60 votes, the filibuster-proof majority, also consisted of people like Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, and Ben Nelson of Nebraska. Mm-hmm. But they were nominally Democrats who could vote like Democrats once in a while, but on things that really mattered to working people, like the Paycheck Protection Act, it's very, very frustrating indeed. But the problem isn't just on the Republican side, and we're running a little short of time. The problem isn't just on the Republican side, Flavio. It's on ours. I got a couple of examples of things that I just sort of kept my little eyes peeled for. And a progressive guy who's got, you know, he's just wall-to-wall allegedly progressive politics. And lo and behold, he pops up on my feed this morning and says, hashtag inauguration. Joe doesn't seem to understand where he is or what's happening. How did we wind up with this frail zombie? Would you care to guess who he supports, who's all over his Facebook page? I'll give you three guesses and two don't count.
Trump?
No, fuck no. I said he's a progressive.
Wait, okay. I lost you.
Dude's Facebook page is nothing but progressive politics.
Nothing but progressive politics.
You know, all about, you know, things that we as progressives believe in. And then there's this. How did we wind up with this frail zombie? You want to now that I've explained again, do you want to guess who his page is covered with?
Joe Biden.
Bernie! Bernie!
I was going to say,
who is older than the guy he described as a frail zombie?
Jill Stein. I was going to say Jill Stein.
No. And then this, a tweet from Medea Benjamin, who leads Code Pink.
She's something else too. But
She's at least savvy enough to state the following. We'll have plenty of time to bitch and moan and protest Biden policies, all caps. But for now, let's relish in the joy. let's just having Trump out of the White House allows us to breathe again. And Biden is already signing the Paris Accords, lifting the Muslim travel ban, repealing or rejoining the World Health Organization, blocking the Keystone Pipeline, extending the eviction moratorium, taking COVID seriously. And then, you know, damning with faint praise, she says, I know, because she knows she's going to get shit for this. Goddamn neoliberal establishment shill. I know, I know.
I just thought it was funny that, what was the, Randy Rhodes was saying that when Medea Benjamin was over at her house, because, you know, Randy Rhodes put her up at her house. I don't know if she was if Randy Rhodes was joking or not, but Medea Benjamin and her friends trashed Randy Rhodes' house.
Well, she closes this tweet by saying, I know, they're both war parties that prop up a failed murderous system that is destroying the planet, but for the moment, let's heave a sigh of relief and celebrate. And I can...
And I can't argue with that.
But Jesus Christ, we're not even... It ain't midnight yet. We are not into one full day of the Biden administration, and the fucking Purity Patrol is out there pissing and moaning about
yesterday. Yeah. I would have killed them, too. They would, you know, but you know what you say about those people. They would complain if you hung them with a new rope.
Or, as we say here in the hills, they'd piss and moan about being hungry with loaves of bread under both arms.
Exactly. I mean, no, I am sleeping better. I am breathing better. You know, I didn't like seeing all that military around the Capitol because
you have experience with it.
Because that's pretty scary shit.
And I want them gone. I hope they will be. And I hope we don't, you know, we got an ugly case of the paranoids out of September the 11th, 2001. And we're probably going to get another case of the paranoids out of this.
After 9/11. It wasn't, you know. And now that was just, you know, that was just too much. And it does, you know, for somebody that comes from South America, you know, that does, you know, it does make you feel kind of uneasy, you know, and I don't want this for the people here because, well, you know, I'm so self-interested. I live here. Okay. I'm not going to gloat about that. Yeah, you know, at one point I said, okay, the chicken's coming home to roost, yada, yada. But, shit, I live here now. That's not good. If I were on the moon someplace, maybe I could, like, go, ha-ha. No, I live here now. Not funny. Not at all. I'm not gloating, and I confess I was living in the pit of my stomach for a few days, for the duration,
I know. Well, here, since we are running near, well, we're past time, but let me share one more piece of Thorn in the Side Thursday with you. And for this, we go to Chuck Todd.
Oh, no, not Chuck Todd.
Yes, Choke Toad has already declared what will define the success or failure of the Biden administration because Choke Toad.
Biden is going to need this deeply divided Senate to move quickly, though, because he has choreographed an ambitious start to his first days in office. And because the size and scope of the crises facing him are unlike anything an incoming president has seen in our lifetimes, perhaps you have to go back to FDR. According to our latest NBC News poll, more than 7 in 10 voters believe the country currently is on the wrong track. Another 7 in 10 think the next 4 years will remain politically divided. And a majority say they are mainly worried and pessimistic about the nation's future. So, maybe that's a low bar. That's about the only upside to these poll numbers for Joe Biden. But let's be realistic. Biden's first and most crucial task is to vaccinate America, to fulfill that promise of 100 million vaccinations in his first 100 days. The ultimate success or failure of his presidency may hinge simply on that one promise that he made. And it might be his only way to begin immediately cauterizing America's social, economic, and political wounds and begin to combat that pessimism that you saw dripping from our poll. Let's put it this way. If Biden wants to succeed, he has to fulfill that first vaccination promise, because everything he wants to do revolves around convincing the public that after 4 years of Trump, the Biden administration can make government competent again. He doesn't even have to make it efficient, just workable. If Biden doesn't get it right, he will have failed on the job he was elected to do.
Jesus jumping Christ on a syringe needle. Is there a bigger poster child, a more obvious poster child for the Peter principle, for failing upward every day upward of your life?
How old is he?
Oh, I don't know. If he's 50, I'm stunned.
I'll be 55 this year, but he can't be that old.
No.
And he's that stupid. God.
Well, he lives for this kind of both-siderist horse shit.
I just...
Oh, okay. So, no, he is... He will be 49 this year. So, yay me, I got that one right. Not even 50.
Not even 50. God damn. What a waste.
I think there should be like an internet meme that every time he opens his idiot mouth, the Twitter just explodes in portraits of Choke Toad with the words, "How does this man have a job?"
Yeah. No, I mean... Dimmer than a bag of.
Here's your hillbilly.
I can't.
No, here's your hillbillyism. Take it to heart. He is dumber than a head and a hog is in the ass.
Yeah.
Or as Matt in San Francisco puts it, subject line: the toad. What does Chuck Todd think about it? Said no one ever.
Yes!
God almighty. Again, and we're not even 24 hours in. But there is, you know, there is some happy news. Among other things, and this was exciting. Mm-hmm. We have made substantial progress. Among other things, for instance, this showed up in my timeline earlier. Let me just scroll down to it real quick. Today, and this is via Public Citizen, today a constitutional amendment was introduced in the Congress, in the House, on a bipartisan basis to overturn Citizens United. This is called, you know, getting shit done. Now, it's going to be a long and tormented process, Flavio.
Wonderful.
But
wonderful.
Representatives Ted Deutch of Florida, Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, Jamie Raskin of Maryland, and John Katko, a Republican from New York, reintroduced a bipartisan constitutional amendment to get big money out of politics and restore democratic power to the American people. It is the Democracy for All Amendment, H.J. Res. 1.
Wonderful.
And it reaffirms the rights of all states and the federal government to pass laws that regulates spending in elections, reversing the concentration of political influence, blah, 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 blah. It's already got a number of co-sponsors, Representative Nanette Berrigan of California, Joy Beatty of Ohio, Suzanne Bonamici of Oregon, Brendan Boyle of Pennsylvania, Val Demings of Florida, Ruben Gallego of Arizona, Johanna Hayes of Connecticut, Darlene will be thrilled, Chris Pappas of New Hampshire, Dean Phillips of Minnesota, Shelley Pingree of Maine, and Norma Torres of California.
Fantastic.
And at the end of the last Congress, it had 221 bipartisan co-sponsors. So, as you know, as Joe Biden might say, that's a big fucking deal. Now,
that is a big
It would be nice if some of these people would introduce the Getting Racism Out of Our Elections amendment that eliminates the Electoral College.
One thing at a time. One thing at a time.
No, we're not in a one thing at a time thing. We can't afford one thing at a time. We've got to walk and we've got to do a lot of walking and a lot of gum chewing all at once.
I mean, I like both of them. Whichever they can get done first, great. But let's do it.
Well, I mean, and see, even if this thing passes, it still has to be passed in the Senate, where probably, you know, they won't want to, especially not the Republicans. But it would be nice if some Democratic senators would introduce that concurrently. Same language, everything. And then it tracks it. Then it tracks parallel.
Let's see what you're saying.
But we really do need an amendment to shed ourselves of the the Electoral College.
That'd be awesome.
We really, really do.
Hey, I'll let you go, but we'll bid ourselves adieu for now.
Yep.
I just wanted to say it was fantastic chatting with you.
Oh, it was a delight. It always is.
Let's do this again, and I hope I brought my B game at least.
No, you brought your A game. You brought your A game. I got a new book to look forward to reading.
All right.
And so I will.
Open Veins of Latin America and Memory of Fire.
Ooh.
After that.
Ooh.
Memory of Fire, which is Memoria del Fuego. That is just fantastic.
You know,
one
of these days you're going to turn me either into a Spanish or a Portuguese speaker, and that'll be a lovely day. I just can't keep up with the speed. But then again, English probably sounds fast to somebody who doesn't speak English.
I hope to make you a romance speaker one of these days that you'll enjoy Italian too.
Oh God, I'd love that. You know, I'd probably pick that up even faster given its relationship to Latin. I mean, I know they all are related to Latin, but it becomes more attenuated the further away you get.
There's a world out there that's your oyster, and I think you'd...
And you just, well, you know what I've said for years and years and years, the great curse of humanity is our short primate lives.
That's true. That's true. And
Brother Deacon Asa takes issue with me on that. He said, you know, really, you want a 500-year-old Donald Trump? You know, I'd roll the dice on that, because I think it would be awfully, wouldn't it be lovely to have had, say, Benjamin Franklin to weigh in the last 4 years?
Maybe, yeah. Or Voltaire.
Yeah. Sure.
God, Voltaire was awesome.
So, you know, we got that. Flavio, take care of yourself. Stay warm. I'm sure it's worse there than it is here.
It's going to get below zero tonight. So.
But is it going to be a dry cold?
It's going to be dry.
Yeah, I can take that.
I can put
bone-chilling, wet shit.
I don't like the wet, crappy shit. No.
No, that's what we get. I mean, you know, we got down to like 19 last night. But it was a nice wet 19. So
no, I can feel my bones creaking.
Just like beauty is only skin deep, but ugly goes clean to the bone. So too does that kind of cold. Flavio, take care of yourself and have a good evening, my friend.
Hey, a big hug and a kiss, eh?
All right, later. Bye now. Our buddy Flavio calling from lovely La Crosse, Wisconsin. And so we come to the end of the program. Thank you, Jeremy, jumping back in. Thank you very kindly. That was most helpful. And let's see. What is it? So we were down to... We were down to 467.50, and that took us to 450. Todd took us to 447.50. And then Jeremy came back in again and took us down to 440.01. So we will start tomorrow, barring some activity overnight, at 740.01. And thank you very kindly for just helping to keep us on the air. Thanks to each and every one of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thanks to our a la carte friends. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy comes your way 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific at headon.live. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Keep getting better. Stay ahead of the pain, my friend. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you can't stay home, by all means, take every possible precaution to save yourself against this godforsaken pandemic. That means wash your hands a lot. That means wear your mask. That means, and remember, I know the maggots don't say so, but it is now officially a patriotic act. You're wearing a mask with Joe and Kamala. And Nancy. And, wear your gloves if you got them. Carry hand sanitizer everywhere you go. Careful about what you touch. Like restroom door handles and things like that. Maintain your social distance 15 feet between people with masks on. And you can't get far enough away from somebody that doesn't have a mask on. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, I'm afraid Nancy Pelosi's going to ruin Joe Biden's unity if she keeps on hollering about wanting Donald Trump to be tried in his impeachment trial in the Senate. Avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.